Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
Today's Sunday session is brought to you thanks to the fine folks at More Beer. Visit them right now at morebeer.com.
Great beer is about drinkability. Doesn't matter the style.
You guys are like walking beer Wikipedia.
That's the first time that you've ever accepted me as a person.
Or you have a fermentation in your gut.
Yeah. I'm jet-propelled at all times.
How many guys do you think that you have the privilege to slap?
Somebody who's never tasted a commercial example, and this is how you know everything about this beer? Please, you don't.
I think it's bullshit.
I think it's bullshit, too.
Wow. Are you guys going to arm wrestle?
No.
They're going to teabag fight.
Yeah. You heard of Junkyard Wars?
Can I get another high five, Beavis?
Now, live from the Brewing Network studios in Northern California, this is the radio program for home brewers, craft brewers, beer lovers, and beer geeks. It's your only source for live beer radio that brings expert brewers together with, well, expert drinkers. This is the radio program with a head on it. This is The Session.
Good evening, everybody. It's The Session. Welcome back. Thank you for joining us this evening. We have an amazing show for you. Of course, as you know, the great Dave Malalalar from Flat Tail Brewing is going to be on the phone, probably.
Why?
Just to talk about some stuff.
Is
I don't know.
Money or something?
He found the cure for brain cancer or something.
Oh, wow.
I think is what it is. Yeah. Yeah, so we're going to talk to him, but before that, we also have this guy, Charlie Bumofferth, never heard of him, some dude.
The soccer expert?
Yes, that's right. We're talking about Wolverhampton, it's going to be amazing. Dr. Charlie Bamforth is in the studio, of course.
Sitting right here.
Gracing us with his presence.
Yeah, thank you for coming down, Charlie, appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah, can't wait, man. We got a lot of cool stuff to talk to you about. Yeah. You got a book. Really?
Yeah,
you didn't want to overload us. These aren't the literary types. Let me give him one book, and then we'll see what happens.
Okay, go for it.
So have you started your own library that's all books that you've written?
No, that would be boring. That would be self-aggrandizement.
Yeah. We're not opposed to that here.
How many shelves would it be?
Enough. Enough.
Enough.
I had a boss once who said, give me 2 copies of your book. I'll give one away. You can sign that. Don't sign the other. Knowing your ego, it would be better. It would be more valuable to have one that's not.
That's pretty funny. So we're going to talk to Charlie for a bit. It's going to be a great time. You guys give your questions. We have, obviously, in the chat, jump in if you have any questions. And look, if you have questions, this is the show to get them answered. This is the guy. He wrote the books on a lot of things.
Right.
Yeah. So get in the chat. Join us. Feed us information. Learn from the Pope of Foam, I believe is what we call him now.
Oh, is that what we call him?
I think so.
No.
Didn't Jay come up with that or something like that? Justin came up with that?
It was a guy who works for Miller by the name of Jean-Pierre Biawa.
Ah, okay.
And he said, that's what they call me in Berlin, the Pope of Foam.
The Pope.
Now he's the Pope of Freshness, his new book.
That's true. We're going to get into that. I have some questions on that.
How to get fresh.
How to get fresh. I need to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I need to do it.
Yeah, get a new flannel.
Yeah. Hey, this is not flannel. It's cotton.
Oh, it's not?
Flannel? Come on, it's flannel. Oh. It's almost summertime, for God's sakes. Jeez, Warren.
Sorry, I'm sorry.
Wow. You know who's not sorry, for some reason? More Beer, our fine sponsor of More Beer. You get absolutely everything you need to make great beer at home by going to morebeer.com. They have been a great sponsor of this show since pre-day one, since day zero, and we really appreciate it. So check them out. Go to morebeer.com. Do all your online shopping there. You can also do your Amazon shopping over on our homepage, of course, which is the Brewing Network, which I'm sure you're there downloading shows feverishly or in a fever. And you don't know what you're doing. That's probably, I think, how most we get most of our downloads.
Either one, you should shop on Amazon.
Yeah. Go to there, get the Amazon banner, click on that, do some online shopping.
Yeah, you're waiting for that download, do some shopping.
Yeah, it'll be good for you. Man, I'm excited about the show. I was thinking about the show today, and I was driving along, like, trying to think of questions to ask Charlie, because it's not every day that we get someone here who knows actually what they're talking about,
right?
In great swaths like Charlie does.
Yes.
And I was approaching an intersection. It was like a four-way stop. Totally blew. I see this lady like stop, and then she starts to go. I almost blow the stop, and I honk at her. I hit my brakes real hard, and I honk at her like she's doing something wrong. She's like, "It's a four-way stop," and I like drove around her like an asshole. And I didn't know what I was doing. I was like, "Oh, she just didn't understand." I'm like, "Well, no." No, that was my fault. It was right by my house, like on Willow Pass, right there, like one of those. The entire way to the bar, and about 20 minutes after I got here, I kept replaying the scene over and over in my mind. Yeah. And then I'm going, yeah, that was my fault. I was so stupid. So dumb.
Been there, done that.
So what are your thoughts on four-way stops, Charlie?
Yeah. No, bro. Don't blame me for this.
I need you to write the book on four-way stops, because I need to read that, apparently.
That's right. I was thinking of questions, too, and they all seem like the guy in the back of the class that didn't do the homework, read the homework assignment, and he's got questions because he doesn't know what, you know.
Like, what is foam?
Yeah, like
why is it good?
So, yeah, I'll be that guy.
Well, I did get a question once. What's a douche? Because I'd use that word.
What's a douche?
Yeah, well, I might have used a story before. 8,000 years ago, you know, beer's been drunk all that time, and in that time it's been used as a beverage.
Yeah.
But it's been used to mix medicines. It's been used as a hair shampoo, as you can see. And and it's been used as an enema and a douche.
Oh,
this guy put his hand up and he said, excuse me, I said, what? He said, what's a douche? I said, you know, if you're a bad shot, it's an enema. He said, I'm sorry, I don't understand. So I drew
how long did the laughter last?
I drew him a diagram, but he didn't recognize anything.
Oh, poor guy.
I wonder where he is now.
I haven't seen your drawing skills.
He was totally in the dark, you know. But
See, that's a good story, man. See, that's the book I want to read. I want to read your... Are you writing your memoirs?
They're not memoirs as much, but I'm writing a book, which will be out with Oxford University Press, and it's due with them in about 9 months, a year's time.
Wow.
And it's called In Praise of Beer.
Okay.
So it'll be... it won't be heavy-duty science. It'll be anecdotes.
For us laymen.
For everybody.
If you need someone to write the foreword, I'm an expert. I've written a foreword before for a book, a law book, actually, Charlie.
Yeah, a law book.
Yeah, we have a lawyer friend of ours. Oh, I'm sorry.
Before you say yes, you should read his foreword.
Really. I love how surprised he is about it being a law book.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's about the four-way stop. Right? Yeah,
well, look, it's a traffic law
book. I didn't say I was smart. I could make words happen. He's writing a book and asked me to write the foreword, I guess, because everyone was on vacation at the time. But so I'm just saying.
Okay.
And I wouldn't charge you. It would be personal. It'd
thank
be
you for
a favor for you. Yeah.
I'll give it due consideration.
Please do.
consideration.
Okay, I've considered it.
Yeah, exactly. That was a long time.
It's more like douche consideration. I think that's what that is.
So I can see a book tour with this new book.
Oh, yes. I think so. Oh,
really?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
I mean, almost like your best format, as far as I'm concerned, is your stand-up routine.
Well, thank you. Yeah.
You do need to do a one-man show.
Yeah.
Like a stage, a night with Charlie. Spend the night with Charlie, and just a stool.
No, it's not spend the night with me. That's not on offer.
No, an evening. Just an evening.
Just an evening.
Yeah. He'll buy you breakfast. He'll make you breakfast in the morning. That's the subtitle for the event.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, super.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Hefeweizen. Like
oh, yeah. I see what you're doing. So you're going to be retired. You're going to do this book tour. You're going to travel all the world.
Yeah.
I'm hearing you. Good job.
We are actually going. I'm going to Australia and New Zealand in July and August to do
all right.
Lecture.
Well, listeners out there, if you've got events coming up, this guy's going to be available.
Yeah. So I am. Well, I'm not sure if you're friends or you know them, but the Radio Brews News and all those people, I'll be doing one with them in Brisbane in August.
Yeah. That's cool. Are you available for private tours, as Tasty is alluding to?
Right.
Like, can someone hire you for their backyard do? Like, got a couple, got five people coming over. I need you to tell me about draft systems.
Well, I'll be talking at the craft brewing event in Adelaide. So if people want to go there, and I'll happily shake their hand and talk to them there and sell them a book or something, but... I'm doing a series of talks through the Institute of Brewing and Distilling in different venues. So I'm going. So I start in Adelaide, then Perth, and then I think it's Melbourne next, Brisbane, Sydney, Launceston, and over to New Zealand to Auckland.
So. Nice. You're a busy guy, man.
Yeah.
Is Adelaide a nice place? I was talking with an Australian listener, and he said it was a dump.
They got a wonderful brewery there called Cooper's. Wonderful, wonderful people. Okay. But I have to say, the last time I was in Adelaide, it was shut. So it's closed for the day, I think. But they're all. I love Australia. I love all the Aussies, and we have a great banter. I just love going down there.
The pictures look nice.
Yeah,
but he said it was not great.
No, Adelaide's a good place, and Cooper's just wonderful people.
That's cool, man.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
God, you're gonna be busy in. Is that before you retire, or is that
be before I retire.
Okay. Yeah. Good. Yeah. What are your plans after you retire?
More of the same.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Somebody said, "Don't retire, just do less." So I'll probably retire and do more. I don't know. I don't know. Stay in Davies anyway, but I do have more books to write, and I won't be pestering whoever succeeds me. You know, I'll try and stay out of that person's hair. And, if invited to do things, I'll do them. If you invite me down here, I'll come down here.
Yeah. Be careful, because we might lean on you every Monday.
You might
be a permanent institution. Yeah.
What are you doing next Monday?
Yeah. I'll read the soccer scores for you.
We'll be glad to have you back, sir. Anytime.
It's nice to be here.
Yeah, that sounds cool, man. First of all, I'm happy that you're in a position where you can retire, because that's really great. Yeah. Are they going to give you a pension there from Davis?
I hope so.
Let's get real here for a second.
Add to the ones from other people. I've actually got a Molson Coors pension from my days in the UK, because Bass, of course, part of it went to Molson Coors. And also, one or two other things. So, yes, they do. But I'll have put in 20 years in December 2018. So
I'll
get the full at UC Davis. So I'll get the full medical coverage.
Stuff,
Nice.
That means quite a lot.
That's great. Are you ever going to any of the homebrew conventions, like HomebrewCon that's coming up here, AHA deal?
I have been to them. I don't seem to get invited very often. I don't homebrew. I've never homebrew in my life. My wife would correct me on that. She said, "You did. It was bloody awful."
Bad ones never happen, right? That's, you don't count the bad ones.
I said to somebody once, he said, "Do you brew at home?" I said, "No, I was a brain surgeon. I wouldn't go home and operate on my wife." I try to keep the day job, I won't be brewing beer.
Okay.
Trust me.
And
the world should be thankful for that.
Yeah. Really. Yeah.
We won't have Bamforth Brewing opening in 2019.
No.
No, not never.
No.
Not going to happen.
Not going to happen.
Okay. I'm surprised that you haven't been tapped to speak at HomebrewCon. We should make this
happen.
Well,
the format is pretty much you volunteer to do it. They don't solicit people. But
We should sign him up for it, because I don't think he would ever do it himself.
You don't have to be a homebrewer.
I think Brad Smith did.
You probably have an outstanding invitation.
I think I had a conflict.
Sure. Right. Okay.
But I'm always happy to.
See, that's what I'm saying. I think we misle him, right? We sign him up, and then say, "Hey, you've been invited. Why don't you come and talk about a couple things?" He'd be like, "Yeah, okay." And then we'll submit the synopsis, and we'll do all the things, and then he'll never know, except this conversation that we're having here about it.
He might remember it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that'd be great.
No, you don't have to be a homebrewer to talk at the conference.
I've been to the Amateur homebrewers, whatever it is.
American Homebrew Association.
Yeah, I've spoken to a couple of those.
Yeah, I'm sure you
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, I think it'd be good. If anybody hasn't bought their tickets so far, tickets are now on sale for the 39th Annual Homebrewers Conference, otherwise known as, it says AKA, but I don't like abbreviations, HomebrewCon.
Says the guy with con.
Thank you. Join your homebrewing comrades this June 15th through 17th in Minneapolis, the City of Lakes. Did you know that, Charlie? Minneapolis is called the City of Lakes.
Yep, knew that.
You did?
I did.
Shit.
It's right by a river, though.
For three unforgettable days of learning, camaraderie, and delicious beer. Space is limited, so be sure to register now at homebrewcon.org.
39th year. That's impressive.
39th year, dude.
Next year's going to be a party.
It's
going to
be good, man. It's going to be a good time.
There's so many before we even went to the first one. Jesus. I thought that was primitive.
Yeah. Huh. You were at the first one?
No, I wasn't. Oh. But when I went in 2003, I went to the first one. And it had been going on a long time. And
yeah.
It looked like it was pretty rough.
Yeah.
It's so, like, organized.
My first one was 2001 in L.A. at the Four Seasons. Still remember it. And it was like 300 people. And it was very awkward. it was. I don't know, man. You get those people that are like super into brewing, yeah. And then you take the focus group of that group, and those are the people who go like the super beer nerds. And it was very intense. Uh-huh. And then now it's kind of grown where it's not I don't want to say a competition, but I don't know. It's not as intense. It's more kind of laid back. It's like a more known hobby. So there's different people are kind of just, oh, hey, and you can chat about beer, but you can also talk about what's going on in your life or like you can actually make friends instead of talking about boil rates.
No, they talk then because the information didn't go out as fast as it does now. Now this is, information age has taken over since then. 2001. Is the internet still around?
It's still around. The tubes are still running.
I got my first internet account in like 1998 or something like that.
So Doc still uses his first internet account. AOL. His AOL email.
Oh, no, I have an old email account.
Netscape?
Yeah.
Prodigy?
No, Netcom.
Oh, jeez.
Netcom.
Yeah. It was way back. Yeah, for sure. So the information, like for instance, like the Brewing Network, the 10 years or 11 years we've been doing our information distribution changes a lot.
Yeah.
All the books, everything.
It amazes me how many people listen to the show around here, right? Like, I always think of the people who are listeners not being around here. I don't know why. Just being in Australia or whatever.
Right.
I was doing this, like, our house walkthrough, getting a house. And the guy, the foreman's, like, walking around. And, he's telling me things. Oh, this is where your, hot water heater's going. This is all the things. And I'm talking to him. And he's like, I recognize your voice.
Really?
I'm like, what? He goes, are you on a podcast? Yeah. And I'm like, who the fuck are you? What is this?
That is weird.
He's a home brewer from my hometown.
Yeah, sure.
Being listener. Super nice dude, and talking about beer and stuff, and I was like, wow, this is, I never thought in a million years that somebody this local would be listening to our little radio show.
I've had local people recognize my voice, but I'm always in like a bar. That's really weird that you're just like out in the world. Like,
yeah.
I had somebody,
in the big world.
Yeah. I literally had somebody at Disneyland recognize my voice.
Really?
Me too.
It was bizarre.
It was crazy, right?
I've got
the same thing on the real world. Like.
Or you're in an elevator someplace and you just say something like, Becca, can you push button number 4? And they're looking at me.
People just ask, are you Beardy? And they don't have to listen to me speak. And then they tell me to shut up. So
that's right.
That's
all
fair.
All I
wanted
to know.
Shut up,
I mean, it makes the conversation short, so I appreciate it.
I'm sure they do too.
Because then I just stare at them.
I'm sure they appreciate that.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll tell you what. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to get into the interview. We have Dr. Charlie Bamforth here, and I don't know. We have a lot of beer. And what are you drinking, Charlie? What is that?
It's an IPA of some description.
I didn't catch
the name, but it's not quite bright.
All right. Yeah. Well, neither are we. We'll be right back. It's the Brewing Network.
You're listening to the Brewcasters. The Brewcasters on the Brewing Network.
Are you a member of the White Labs Customer Club? If not, you should be. It's the easiest way to earn free stuff for turning in your old homebrew labels from either Vials or Pure Pitch. All you have to do is save your labels and redeem them for things like free yeast, an exclusive White Labs t-shirt or sweatshirt, and even the opportunity to brew with the yeast man himself, Chris White. Signing up is easy. Just go to whitelabs.com/customer club, fill out the registration form, and then mail in your labels. They will return the favor by sending you awesome White Labs swag. Go sign up today at whitelabs.com/customer club. White Labs, pure yeast and fermentation since 1995.
The 21st Amendment.
Watch out!
Do you like beer? They make beer.
Watch out!
Do you like friends and fun? They make friends and fun.
Watch out!
Do you still like to have a good time? The 21st Amendment.
Watch out!
The 21st Amendment in San Francisco, located at 563 2nd Street, two blocks from the building where baseball is seen and played. Try their beers in the pub or try them in the can. Featuring
Monk's Blood.
Made with real monk.
Watch out!
So why not have the best time of your life? Go to the 21A and Sean O'Sullivan will personally greet you with a can of
Monk's Blood. The 21st Amendment.
Watch out!
This advertisement is not in any way affiliated nor associated with the 21st Amendment Bar and Pub, nor its subsidiaries or affiliates. This telecast is not copywritten by the 21st Amendment for the private use of the Brewing Network. Any use of this telecast without Jamil Zainashev's consent is prohibited. Suck it, JP.
Brewing great beer is a process of continuous learning, and the best books on every aspect of brewing can be found at Brewers Publications, with more than 50 awesome titles like Modern Homebrew Recipes by Gordon Strong, Designing Great Beers, The Ultimate Guide to Brewing Classic Beer Styles by Ray Daniels, American Sour Beers, Innovative Techniques for Mixed Fermentations by Michael Tonsmeyer, For the Love of Hops, The Practical Guide to Aroma, Bitterness, and the Culture of Hops by Stan Hieronymus, and Radical Brewing, Recipes, Tales, and World-Altering Meditations in a Glass by Randy Mosher, plus many, many more. These are the books and the authors with the knowledge to push your brewing farther than you thought possible. And you'll find them all at fine homebrew and book retailers everywhere. And visit the website at brewerspublications.com. Brewers Publications, all the best on beer and brewing.
Since the first time the Brewing Network microphones turned on, More Beer was behind it. More Beer sponsors the programming on the BN because, like you, they love brewing. And like the Brewing Network, they love sharing their knowledge. MoreBeer.com isn't just a website to place your next equipment or ingredient order. MoreBeer.com also gives you access to free beer information that will make you a better brewer. Go to MoreBeer.com and click into the Learning Center. You'll find podcasts, technical facts, video tutorials, and more, including access to The Buzz, More Beer's social network of more than 5,000 members. And some of them might even be crazier about beer than you are. Get over to morebeer.com today and take advantage of the buzz, the forum, the learning center, and make sure you're signed up to receive the newest More Beer catalog. More Beer, bringing you absolutely everything for beer making.
Marin Brewing Company in Northern California has been making award-winning beers for more than 25 freaking years. Today, I want to tell you about their new 12-ounce cans of Mount Tam Pale Ale. The good stuff, Mount Tam is bright gold, 5.5% ABV to keep you feeling good, and has been winning awards since 1989. If you're visiting the Bay Area, get your butt out to Marin Brewing Company. They pour tasty beers and serve great food every day until midnight. Come in for a tour, stay for the food, and pick up a six-pack of cans of Mount Tam Pale Ale to enjoy at home, camping, biking, or whatever the hell you do. Owner Brendan Moylan has this to say about Marin Brewing beers.
It's freaking awesome.
Marin Brewing has won more than 100 gold medals in international competitions. Check out marinbrewing.com for all their award-winning beers, food, and merch. Marin Brewing Company in Larkspur, California. Award-winning taste, refreshing finish. It's freaking awesome.
Hey, this is Gabriel from Half Acre in Chicago. You're listening to The Session on the Brewing Network.
Yes, you are. It is The Session, the night, the great and mighty and powerful Session. And before we get to Dr. Bamforth, I do want to let you guys know, Great Fermentations is giving away free homebrew ingredients for 15 years.
Why 15?
Why not 15? Because it's better than 14 years, Warren.
But it's not as good as 16.
You know what, Warren? I don't know what to tell you about that. I feel like 15 is a great number. I feel like 16 would be really awkward.
I mean,
much like this live read I'm doing.
I'd be happy to have 15 years of free ingredients.
Thank you very much.
15 more years.
And a Blickman Brew Easy All Grain Brewing System. You know, Tasty, that's a good point. I wonder if it is
it transferable.
Can I give it it's a, like a warranty, like a dual owner warranty.
Yeah. I think what if I have my heirs? Just not tell them I died, and just like, you know.
Like cashing your Social Security checks kind of thing? I think that'd be fraud still in some weird way. I don't know.
Well, it's the American way now, I think.
That's right.
Just lie your ass off?
That's right. Just go to greatfermentations.com/giveaway and enter for your chance to win. It's a huge prize, a $10,000 retail value. Compliments of Great Fermentations. The grand prize announcement will be on Saturday, June 17th. Also, they're doing random giveaways every 2 weeks leading up to the close of the competition. Items include conical fermenters, temperature controllers, the new Blickman Riptide brew pump, and more. As always, you get top-notch customer service, same-day shipping on many items. Check them out, greatfermentations.com/giveaway. Be sure to like them on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter as well. That's all under GR8 Fermentations. Head over to greatfermentations.com. Homebrew ingredients for 15 years, Charlie. That's a deal.
That's very good.
That's a deal. You can't even shake a stick at that.
No.
Or something. I do have on the line a very special guest. What is going on?
Yeah, he's that special.
Jeez, what is happening?
is that what he's listening to?
He's going to murder me. No. Justin.
I got my own intro music?
Yes, you did. Everyone needs a theme song, bro, and I feel like, you know, some Sharon Jones was yours.
Yes, I've felt that way my whole life.
About damn time.
Yeah. Hang on, let me close all the porn on my computer here.
Yeah, we don't want pop-ups.
There we go, that should be fine.
All right, good. How's it going over there? You're over in Colorado still, huh?
I'm in Colorado. The construction wouldn't let me leave. Not that I know what the hell I'm doing, but they wanted me here anyway. And so, Charlie, I wanted to apologize that I'm not there to hang out and drink a beer with you today.
Well, it's okay. I know you're here in spirit, and I'll have my beer despite you.
Good. And really, let's be honest, you just wanted to say hello to Kate the Great anyway, so it wouldn't have mattered if I was there.
No, I don't see her. No.
I know, because I'm not there.
That's right. she's with you, is she?
And I don't trust you around her, Charles.
It's the English, you know. It's the English.
And I'm also just a little sad that I'm not there, because you don't come in that often. So I just wanted to hear your shining voice.
Well, thank you very much indeed.
Well, you know, Jay, he is retiring at the end of next year. So he just told me in the last segment that he is available every Monday after retirement.
Charlie, what are you going to do with yourself in retirement? I can't imagine you just sitting around.
Yeah, I got lots of writing to do. I thought I might write something different, a bodice ripper or something. Some sort of
oh.
Sex manual.
Some steamy romance.
Sex
This is how you do it.
With diagrams. There's things I want to do, you know. I'll continue to write about both beer and football. So I'll continue doing that, and I'll do guest appearances here and there. But I'm sure my wife has a number of things she would like me to do. And I think she would like to go traveling, and the last thing I want to do is do any more traveling.
But, right.
But she would like to go traveling that doesn't involve beer, but, other than sort of quaffing it. But
sure.
life will go on, and life will go on at UC Davis as well. So.
I'm sure they're going to miss you there anyway.
Well, that's nice. But, you know, it's like Charles de Gaulle said, the graveyard is full of people who thought they were indispensable. But,
that's good.
That's oddly enough, that's my tattoo I have. So
Where's that?
I can't show you.
JP, what do you think? I'm way above Charlie on the death pool, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh my God, yes.
You might. I think it's between you and Tasty, and if that tells Charlie anything about the death pool.
Right. Well, and Tasty's losing all that weight, so I'm really skyrocketing to the top.
You're pulling ahead.
Well, yeah. I don't know. Maybe it might be neck and neck more so than ever, but you know, he might find it again. You never know. You never know about these things.
You're right. Well, what are you guys drinking? I'm lonely, and I'm going to live vicariously.
I'm drinking an Easy Jack.
Oh,
same thing.
Me
it's
too.
Real good.
I got a Kolsch.
Three Easy Jacks and a Kolsch. are you drinking, Charlie?
I don't know. It's an
number
IPA,
five?
And it's cloudy. So
cloudy,
yeah.
That looks like the perennial beer.
He's drinking the perennial.
I'm drinking the perennial.
Yeah. So Charlie, did you do that on purpose, the cloudy IPA?
No. I just asked for something that wasn't ridiculously high in alcohol, but had a nice hoppy nose. And they said, yeah. How about the cloudiness? I said, I'd live with it on this occasion. So,
to anybody else, that would mean no thank you.
Right.
But apparently...
You know, it's interesting, you know, and I was brought up and always preached and had preached at me that beer should be bright. And I still, in my heart of hearts, feel that way. But, you know, I was saying to somebody who, not too long ago, that, you know, if people buy this stuff and that's what they want, who am I to say that it's not the right thing? Right. So each to his or her own. My personal preference, I think this beer would be better by being brighter, but it tastes good. And so I've just got my eyes shut tight at the moment. It's a great foam on it, a great foam.
I'm going to the Firestone Walker Invitational Beer Fest. Mm-hmm. So is JP there. And yeah. We do some panel discussions there. And one of my panel discussions this year, you're going to love this, JP,
yeah,
is cloudy versus bright. And we are going to have two brewers on the panel who are kind of advocating for why the cloudy beer is a success and why it's tasty. And then two brewers on the panel who believe wholeheartedly that beer should be bright. So should make for a pretty interesting discussion, having the two brewers do it.
Can we get one of those, a pair of those giant sumo costumes and have them actually just battle it out, and the winner gets to declare what's best and what's not?
I don't see why not. I will pass that idea along right now.
Okay, good.
Hey, how about one of the guys arguing for Bright being Matt Brynjolfsson?
That's a good idea. They did not put him on my list.
Oh, he's such a bigot. I mean,
you know what I had to
be adamant about it.
Right. You mean he likes being right.
Go ahead, Jason.
I can have him do a cameo, especially if it's two to two. Matt can come up and be the tiebreaker. Yeah.
He should be the judge.
Yeah, that's a good idea. You know what? I really am going to send that along. That's a great idea.
At the end, he'll decide who wins.
Yeah.
Clear.
Yeah, the cloudy thing we've talked about a lot here on the show, Charlie, and we get kind of a lot of flack over it because we're very opinionated people. But I mean, I think at the end of the day, you're right. Like, if it tastes good to you, then that's cool. I just don't. To me, it kind of turns my stomach a little bit.
Well, all I can tell you is this: that we did a piece of research a number of years ago now, and we compared beers of different clarities, and the ones that were preferred were the ones that were bright.
Right.
The ones that were not clouded, they were the ones that were preferred. There was no question about that. And, you know, 5-10 years ago or whatever, I would have said absolutely unacceptable. But then, you know, I always preach that, you know, a beer is what people want. So people say, what's a good beer? I say, what the hell do you like? What you like, what I like, you know, it doesn't matter what I like, it's what you like.
I don't like smoked beer, but
I can't stand smoked beer.
People start drinking them, yeah. Good for them, right?
And most sour beers, I pull them straight down the drain, but you know, cut out the middleman. But people like them. And if there are people who like turbid beers, then, okay, life will go on. It wouldn't be my choice. But then again, you've given me this, so I haven't paid for it.
It's your favorite beer.
Right.
Yeah.
So a lot of the haze in these beers are polyphenols. Now, what about shelf life? You know, the book just not coming out about freshness and so forth. What do you think of shelf life of these beers?
Well, I mean, it depends if it is polyphenols. If it is a protein polyphenol haze, I don't know what it is. I haven't analyzed it.
If it's yeast, it's a failure. You don't want that's
not, you know, I've heard of people saying, well, I'm just going to put starch in, you know. I mean, I stand up in front of classes and say, if you've got a starch haze, you're a bloody incompetent, you know. And then I read of people who are actually saying, well, I'm going to put some starch in to make it more cloudy. And I'm thinking this goes diametrically opposed to everything that I've ever believed in. Yeah. And still at the 80-20 level, still the way I feel. But I'm trying to be very, very careful because, you know, because I'm a sublime politician and diplomat, and I never say the wrong thing. And I never lie. But really, it's my preference that it, and I think the skill is in a bright beer. If there are cloudy beers, so be it. Now, let me just tell you a story, if I can hog the airwaves for a moment. I mean, years ago, back when I was with the Bass Brewing Company, we had a brand of beer. It's called Stone's Bitter, and it was from Sheffield in the north of England. And whichever way you had it, it was always bright. It was never cloudy. But one of them was cask-conditioned and clarified with isinglass finings, one version of it, and the other version was filtered. Hmm. And whatever way you look at it, the one that was cask-conditioned, the one that was not filtered, tasted better. Mm-hmm. Now, I always believed that was because it was lower in carbonation and it hadn't been pasteurized, mm-hmm. Flash pasteurized and so on. But somebody said to me, could the filtration have taken something away? You know, so I think, you know, there's potentially research that could be done. Yeah. You know, so take a beer, have it in the cloudy form, have it in the filtered form, and can people with blind tasting, without looking at it, can they tell the difference? And that would be an interesting experiment to do. Okay. Looking at it, you know, and if it suddenly is bright and people who are expecting to look like this, they're going to say, what the hell happened, you know?
Right. Wrong. This beer's broke.
Yeah. So the thing is consistency. To me, my preference is bright beers. But I'm not prepared to say that people who like cloudy beer are bad people.
But
the way they're making the cloudy beers, they're not making. It's just not a beer that would have normally been. If you cleared it, it would taste like as good as a beer that was made to be cleared. They make these beers by recipe to be cloudy and be more juicy. And they,
yeah.
you know, they add the hops at the time where it makes it that way.
Yeah, and so be it. You know. Everybody likes different types of beer, so, you know. But I'm saying, you know, I don't like the look of this particularly, apart from the foam. I think the foam's great, but it tastes good.
Yeah. No, a beer that's hazy, a lot of the flavor rides on that. I mean, those particles are holding some of the hop flavor, sure.
Mayway.
Some flavors that aren't as good as if they weren't there.
Yeah.
That's also, yeah.
With the increased phenol and protein complex in there that's creating haze, does that decrease shelf stability at all?
You mean flavor stability?
Right, yes, yeah,
flavor stability. No, I don't think there's going to be any material effect on that. I don't think there's any relationship between the clarity of a beer and its flavor life. And indeed, you know, in terms of clarity life, it's already shitty. So, I mean,
right.
It's not, you know.
Cheap for using.
Besides, if I'm, you know, hoisted by my own petard using a word like that. But in terms of flavor life, no, I don't know that it's going to be any less or any more prone to staling. Because staling is amazingly complicated. It's much more to it than
just if there's floaties or not.
Yeah. Floaties. Yes.
Yes. That's the scientific term.
Well, right. No, I've read the book. It's floaties. I highlighted it. It's a whole thing.
Well, Charlie's entire opinion is way too even-keeled for this show.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, yeah. We have a soapbox over here. I was hoping he was going to get on it, but
he's not done yet.
Well, he said 80-20. He's 80% against it.
We're going to get to the 20 pretty quick.
Yeah. You know, we ought to do a piece of work. I got a great brewer, and he and I need to do a piece of work.
Please.
Literally, this type of beer, we need to do blind tasting, visual tasting. What do people prefer? You know, and I think that on balance, I think most people, most right-minded beer drinkers, would prefer a bright product. But nonetheless, there are people who are buying this.
Yeah, can't deny that. Yeah. You want to be at the right. guy, you know, the bar preaching one thing, but everybody's drinking doing something else. Yeah, the rest of it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like you said, Charlie, at the end of the day, it's whatever you like. And I'm just trying to get my head around it because like you, I grew up learning how to brew and drinking beer that was clear. And if there's a haze or turbidity or it's murky, and it, by the way, we should clarify between haze and murk. You know what I mean? A little haze is fine, but the murkiness is weird. But it's and I'm trying to just understand it. I'm trying to, like, change that a little bit and be a little more accepting, but I can't do it.
I think it's because, you know, everybody's looking for a point of difference, and this is somebody's point of difference.
Yeah.
Somebody decided they're going to come up with a whole new genre. Hey, everybody wants bright beer, so I'm going to make it cloudy.
Right.
And that's where it all came from, and people are telling a story. Well, so be it. If people buy it, and they buy into the story, and that's what you give them every time, okay, you're satisfying that genre. Mm-hmm. But whatever you do, it's like any style of beer. Don't stamp your opinions on, you know, and don't elevate something and say, well, this is definitely better than this because this is this. Mm. It really doesn't matter what you think, it's what the customer thinks. I mean, I may have told this story in this room before, but, you know, we had a beer in the UK that was in our brewery, the one I was QA manager of. It was grainy, And the bosses said, you've got to get rid of that character. We got rid of the character, and people start sending the beer back to the brewery. What have you done to the beer? I said, well, we've made it better. No, you've not. You've ruined it, you know? So who can tell? It's what people want.
That's true. And I guess that's at the end of the day, that's what matters.
Yeah, there are people who drink very gently flavored North American lagers, and that doesn't make them bad people.
It might, though.
Some of them.
That's the test you should be doing.
There's so many of them. If that many people are bad, we're in trouble.
Yeah, if people are drinking North American light lagers, are they bad people? That's a book you need to write.
They're probably bad people, just not because they're drinking that.
There
beer.
Are other reasons. Right.
And there are other reasons.
Yeah, but you see the point.
I see the point. Yes.
He said professorially.
Right. Right. Right.
And that's why it's all wrong. In the world of that other drink with a four-letter word begins with W. You've got people like Robert Parker who's bullshitting and pontificating about what is good and what is bad. You know, and you give him a blind tasting of a wine, and he wouldn't know if it's two buck chuck or whatever. But because he says this is somehow better or this is somehow worse, then whole markets are driven. And I think that would be totally wrong in the world of beer. That people, if somebody stands up and says, this is clearly rubbish, I don't think that's the right thing to do because it offends somebody. Mm. It offends somebody.
In the beer world, we don't really have that, right? We have online like chat rooms that will decide what the next thing is, but it's not like one or two people as in the wine world,
no,
right?
No, it's not.
Or am I missing out on something?
I don't think there is, and I don't think there should be. I don't think there should be somebody who is the ultimate arbiter of what is good and what is bad.
Other than us.
Besides this show, right?
Right. Well, possibly, with present exception.
Right. Of course.
We're so wise here.
Yeah. but you know, and it certainly shouldn't be me. It is each to his or her own. And if people don't buy your beer, you're doing something wrong. But if they're buying the beer, you know. You see, there's things I don't like. I don't like Rocky Mountain oysters in stout. I think, I don't like Rocky Mountain oysters on a plate.
But ESB
I prefer them left swinging where they are. In the wild, native. You know?
In their fleshy shell.
As long as not swinging close to me. But I don't want them in a beer. But people are saying, oh, Rocky Mountain oyster stout. Well, no, not for me.
Yeah.
But does it sell?
I don't know.
Yeah, it does. And it's a gimmick. You know, there's a beer in New Zealand, apparently, made with deer semen.
How does that affect the
product? Is it a milk stout?
I don't know. I know nothing about it.
And do they harm the deer in the making of the beer?
No, I think the deer enjoys it.
His name is Ralph.
So there is a bit of a germ of an idea there, but there's a joke there. Come on.
You're right. Yeah, that was good. That was a little highbrow for the show.
Yeah, we're not.
But you get the point. You know, people. It's gimmicks. It's gimmicks, and some gimmicks will last longer than others.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how to phrase this question without being semi-insulting, but has craft beer kind of devolved into needing gimmicks to continue to push on?
I think there's a lot of gimmicks. Yeah. I really do. Mm-hmm. People want to get noticed.
Mm-hmm.
So everything's bigger and bigger, more and more alcohol, bigger and bigger bottles, wackier and wackier ingredients.
Putting fruit in your
intense
beer.
Flavor. Well, you know, I may have talked in the, I mean, I was up in Humboldt County once and I had a chili beer. I've never tasted any meal remotely as hot as this beer, you know, and it was undrinkable. But it's, hey, look, we make a chili beer. Well, wow, we do chilies. And you can see the damn thing floating around.
Oh, God.
It wasn't a subtle jalapeno note to it. It was just immense.
Just the heat.
Yeah, it was just sheer heat. And undrinkable. And the same company makes a raspberry beer, which is equally as intensely flavored. And I don't think that's smart. And so, you know, people going to pushing the limits all the time, pushing the limits and so on. And here they're pushing the limits on clarity.
Yeah,
it's what they're doing.
Something different.
Yeah,
it's something different. All right,
I gotta go finish this plate of Rocky Mountain oysters.
If you see any around there, I'd like to see what those look like
with your shot of
Rocky
deer
Mountain.
Semen.
Did you get more than two?
A whole plateful.
There's
you having hot dogs as well.
Five.
All right, Jay. Well, hey, it was good to hear you. And, you know, have fun in the Colorado sunshine.
I will. Thanks for having me on my show.
And make sure they lay out the paper towel dispensers there, okay, will you?
Yeah. We already decided on that, Tasty.
Oh, nice. Thank you.
We've got actual a new paper home towel bar. Dispensers. Same wooden bar stools, though.
With no backs.
Yeah. I got a cushion I'm getting custom made that I can bring in just for that.
Is that a donut?
So he's getting the weight pushed from his sides to his butt like a Kim Kardashian. That's what he's talking about.
Good idea.
Yeah. Yeah. You said a custom cushion.
I'd be good to these guys, or I'd be nice to them. They're fragile.
Okay. Nice. He already held us at gunpoint.
Have fun, guys. Thank you.
Jay. Later, man.
Hey, thanks for calling in.
All right, now we can get real here.
Yeah, let's turn the phone
down. Man, I feel awkward him listening all the time. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, he stopped listening when he hung up.
Yeah, he's like, oh, okay, I'm really good. I'm fine. He's probably at a bar somewhere. He's not eating anything. Let's talk about your book, Charlie. Let's talk about freshness. We already kind of brought it up a little bit. So you already wrote the book on malt, I believe it was, and foam.
Oh, no, the first one was, it's a six-part series for the American Society of Brewing Chemists. So if you go to the ASBC website, you can go to the bookstore there. And the first one was foam. The second one was flavor.
Flavor, that's
and
right.
And the third one is freshness.
It's freshness.
So they're like, I don't know, but like troubleshooting manuals or car manuals are sort of good practice in each of these areas, yeah.
You can buy all three for a discount price.
You can. They're still very expensive, but nonetheless, worth every penny.
So there's still three left to go.
I don't know why you'd spend a minute making beer without knowledge, really. You got to have knowledge.
There are three more. The next one is it's due with the publisher at the end of the year, and that will be on color and clarity.
Hypocrite. You're right open there, too.
I will be saying it's all about control and how to control it.
Well, are you donating copies to the entire state of Vermont?
And the fifth one will be a general overview of quality principles and interpreting quality and measuring quality and so on. And the last one will be on health and beer and health and, you know, the benefits of sensible consumption of beer.
It's not how to make low-carb
beer. Send those to Ireland. They won't even read that one.
Well, low-carb beer may come into it, but who knows. but each one is dedicated to a grandchild, and I've only got four grandchildren at the moment, so...
The kids got to get busy.
No pressure.
Yeah.
So no pressure on my youngest daughter. But she probably isn't listening to this. She's in Philadelphia.
Yeah, probably not. She's smart. She's probably not listening to this.
Yeah, she probably won't listen to this. But anyway, so the freshness is the one that's just come out.
Excellent. Okay. Well, what should we know about freshness? How do we deal with freshness as on the homebrew level? And maybe even what do we look for in buying our commercial beer?
Well, to my mind, fresh beer is more drinkable. So if you've got fresh flavor in your product, you don't have any degree of staleness. Then it's going to be more drinkable. And beer does change with time. Any beer will change and deteriorate with time. There are a number of big enemies, but the major ones are oxygen and heat. And the one of the main points I make in this book is that no matter what the beer is, the lower the oxygen level in the finished beer and the lower the temperature at which you store the beer, the fresher it will remain for longer. So that is why if you've got packaged beer in cans, bottles, and so on, then the aim has always got to be the lowest possible oxygen level and store the beer at the lowest possible temperature. And if you don't get that sorted out, then back upstream, it's pissing in the wind. So people will say, well, you know, what can we do? And all this business about eliminating oxygen from the brew house and blame the maltster and all these things. All of that is totally secondary if you haven't controlled what happens downstream. So I remember once I was in Milwaukee and talking to a meeting of the Master Brewers Association. And they gave me a title, which was a critical control point analysis of beer flavor stability. And I stood up and I said, keep out the oxygen, keep it cold. Are there any questions? and one guy said, well, what do you say to all these people who have invested in systems for minimizing oxygen uptake in the brew house? And I said, well, if you haven't got refrigerated distribution, and if your packaging line is giving you crazy high oxygen levels in the bottle, you're wasting your time.
Yeah.
You're totally wasting your time. So, you know, work from the back.
Mm-hmm. So, did anybody have a heart attack in the audience?
Yeah, lots of people. You know, there are some very unhappy people, including the people who make brew houses.
Right.
You know, that's where it's all at. You know, so if I was going to educate, the first people to educate are the customers.
Right,
know?
Right.
So you don't go to Costco or whatever and buy, you know, 6 months' worth of beer and stick it in the garret,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You buy enough beer for your own personal needs, which involves a very large refrigerator in your case.
Free-like milk is my advice. Free-like milk, you buy it as you need it.
Yeah. And keep it cold.
Yeah.
You know, I only teach my classes. I don't use the F word in my classes. I only use the C word, centigrade. And so, you know.
By the way, you just freaked out, Beverly. She was looking at you behind you like, what the hell is he about to say right now?
And in this room, it's, what is it, 20 degrees Celsius? So a beer is going to last about 3 months in here. So,
okay.
You know, if we're here for 3 months, the beer will start to be turning in a package. But if you increase the temperature by 10 degrees, so 30 degrees Celsius, it's 1 month. And if you're 40 degrees Celsius, just over 100 Fahrenheit, which it is in my garage in Davis in the middle of summer, you know, a week. But if you're down in the refrigerator, you know, months. So,
wow.
I mean, it's a huge fact. And that's why people like Ken Grossman distribute the beer in refrigerated trucks.
Yeah.
And send it to refrigerated warehouses because, it, you know, it's expensive. But it is the way to keep the beer fresh and absolutely to have the beer with the lowest possible oxygen content in the finished beer. Oxygen in the finished beer is far more important than oxygen upstream, far more important.
Well, say you do reduce the oxygen levels to really reasonable levels, like really, really good numbers.
Yeah.
Where does heat come into play? I know where it comes into play when there's oxygen present, but when there's oxygen in really good shape, how does the heat really affect
it? It's the same argument, because the chemical reactions which are taking place in the finished beer, they're all speeded up by heat, okay?
Chemist.
So, I mean, it's not only about oxygen in the finished product. It's other chemical reactions taking place which are leading to flavor change. And that's the thing. Everybody focuses on oxidation of unsaturated fatty acids. It's much more complicated than that. There's any substance in beer which you can taste, if it changes over time and the beer flavor changes, that's flavor instability. You know, everybody talks about Tomcat pee and cardboard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, it's more than that. And if I was a winemaker, I wouldn't say that. I would say feline.
Right.
And damp parchment.
Of course.
Yes. Right. Oh, now I know what you're talking
with
about.
With much more of an accent than you have
already.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. And swirl it around a bit and probably charge more for it. But but there's lots of other flavor changes taking place as well. And so the chemistry is hugely complicated. So it really is quite simple. You'll slow it all down if you keep the temperature down.
Sure.
And keeping out the oxygen is better. And that is why beer in a can is more stable than beer in a bottle. Because although when you fill a can, you can't get to quite such a low oxygen level as you can with a bottle. But no oxygen is going to get into a can after that. And oxygen can get into a bottle between the neck and the crown cork. So that's why a pry-off is a lot better than the twist-off. Because if you've got a twist-off, it's a very loose seal. And with a pry-off, it's a tighter seal.
Yeah.
Even so, oxygen gets in.
And now, didn't Sierra Nevada, they went from pry-off to twist-off and then back to pry-off,
correct.
Didn't they?
Yeah. A number of years ago.
Because of that,
yeah.
Back, just one more thing on the seal of that cap. If I take my beer and warm beer and chill it, will there be some pull, like it'll pull back, it will try to pull oxygen back through that cap, right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So you've got oxygen exchange.
In the bottle.
There is
the
oxygen,
bottle,
yeah. In between. Mm-hmm. With the can, not so. So, I mean, I always tell a story. I was in Oklahoma. I don't know how I got there, but I was in Oklahoma with my wife and our youngest child. I'm in a restaurant, and this woman said, what would you like to drink? I said, what craft brews do you have? She's got, well, I got Bud, Miller, and Coors. I said, is that it? She said, nope. I got one more. I said, okay, what is it? She said, Pabst Blue Ribbon. I said, okay, I have one of those. And along it came in a can. And I went, oh. And my wife said, "You hypocrite. You hypocrite. You keep bitching about beers better in a can. They bring you into a can and you moan about it."
Right.
And I said, it's psychological. It's totally psychological.
It's a long neck. You expect long necks.
Yeah. What? You don't expect a can in a restaurant.
Oh, okay.
You expect a bottle, you expect whatever it is, you expect it to produce with a degree of finesse.
Yeah.
So a can is not, to my mind, is not finesse.
It's not as elegant as a bottle.
No, but it's better for the beer. And people say, well, you pick up metal. No, you don't. The cans are lacquered on the inside. They're coated.
Will it ever be okay? Will it ever be like, think any people get over that? Like,
I don't know. I hope so. And I should get over it because I should know better.
Because I mean, draft, you're relying on someone to clean lines.
Well, yeah. And draft beer, to me, is the worst of all possible things unless you really know what you're doing. And it's a recipe for disaster.
Wow.
Because if it, you know, you go into a bar and there's 50 beers on tap. What about the one at right at the end that nobody's consuming? You know?
Right.
Just sitting there, you know. And it of itself, if it's been tapped and open, then, you know. But then if people are pulling it and then, you know, it leaves, you know, unless they're cleaning those lines out and it's all.
Yeah, you're getting all line beer.
It's absolute. If somebody's looking after it, if not, it's a recipe for disaster. So I always go in, if I go into a bar like that, which isn't very often, I always say, which of these do you sell the most?
Yes, exactly.
Which of these do you sell the most?
Absolutely.
But I was with my wife. My wife gets very cross with me. I don't know why, but she gets cross with me.
Wives.
Because I don't.
She's heard all your jokes. We haven't.
She's heard all of these. She could give this.
Right.
And I don't complain in restaurants. I just don't complain. So they bring me the wrong meal, and I eat it, you know. But on this one occasion, we're up in Portland, Oregon, and I click my fingers and call the woman over. And she came over, and she was chewing. You know?
Wow. I said, like she didn't have time to fish.
I said, "You need to know this beer didn't smell like this when it left the brewery." And she said, choose something else then.
Yeah.
And when she went, my wife said, "Do you know what I thought you were going to say? Do you know who I am?" And it was smelt of butterscotch. It was diacetyl.
Oh, really?
And of course, what had happened in the pipe, you know,
Pediococcus
had produced diacetyl. Mm-hmm. It smells of butterscotch. Disgusting. Absolutely undrinkable.
Yeah.
And which is a bit different flavor stability, but it's not unless it's a defect. So this book is all about how to prevent beer changing in a disadvantageous way. Remembering there are some beers that do actually improve, you know. And I guess it's a moot point which ones improve and which don't. But without any question, you've got a very alcoholic beer, and it will mature. Mm-hmm. And it's no secret, one of my best friends in the industry is Ken Grossman. And he always says to me, "Charlie, always stress the fact that, you know, Bigfoot gets better with time." And it's because it interacts. So you can do a vertical tasting of Bigfoot, and it gives interesting flavor changes.
Yeah.
But you never hear
it. I could argue the other way, that you just package it too soon. Why does he put it in my hands? It's not ready yet.
Yeah. And all of those things are very valid.
Because some people like it.
The point is, with a higher alcohol product, then you are going to get interactions in the alcohol and other things, and you're going to get the mellowing out of things. When our first child was born in England, 1980, we were given a bottle of Thomas Hardy Ale.
Oh, wow.
And what it used to say on the Thomas Hardy Ale was, you know, best consumed in 25 years' time. Well, we didn't wait that long.
Right.
But 25 years, for God's sake, you know?
Yeah.
So you can tell stories about this. And you could say, "Hey, come round to my place. I got a 1959 Coors Original." You could talk. You could do that.
You can.
Got the Blue Mountain thing on. Right. Right.
But it's people not tend not to.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, especially those beers. I mean, there is a point that, you know, I guess you choose the style about what you're going to age it around.
Well, that's right.
I mean, you wouldn't age a Kolsch for 25 years.
No, you wouldn't.
But you could, I guess.
But the other reality, and a thing I point out in this book, is a lot of stale beer gets drunk. Mm-hmm. And by that, by definition, I'm talking imported beer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, most beer imported in this country is stale.
Mm-hmm.
And people still drink it. And I've said to people have said to me, "Oh, you know, I love Pilsner Urquell. It's just great." And I'm saying, it tastes of cardboard. And they say, "Oh, no." And I'm really looking forward, they say, because I'm going to the Czech Republic, and I'm looking forward to tasting it there. Well, if they go to the Czech Republic and taste Pilsner Urquell, it smells of diacetyl.
No.
Yeah.
Pilsner Urquell in Czech Republic is supposed to have a diacetyl nose.
Really?
Yeah. Mm. So it, to me, actually, the cardboard's better.
Right, right. Yes.
But the point is that it's not the same.
Right.
And so much beer coming into this country is stale. So back in the day, you know, I was with Bass for a number of years. Mm. And the Bass ale, by the time it got to America, was clearly cardboard. So these days, actually, Bass is brewed in New York. It'd be better if it's brewed in San Francisco.
Yeah.
But it's brewed in New York, so it's not come across an ocean.
Right.
Okay, it's come across a nation, but it hasn't come across an ocean.
Right. Right.
But, you know, people get very hung up about, well, how can it be Bass if it's brewed in New York? Well, as long as they're using the right malt, the right hops, the right yeast, adjust the water, same process, you can get a perfect match.
Yeah.
And it's better for the customer because it's fresh. Mm-hmm. So these are the sorts of points I make in the book.
What about hoppier styles? Because even under the best packaging conditions, an IPA right out of the tank as it's going to the bottle line or whatever does not taste like that same beer a week later.
And that's very true. You know, and that's another thing that, you know, I used to say the worst problem is with the very gently flavored beers because they reveal the staleness more obviously. But people like Ken and Vinny say, you know, we worry about our hoppy beers because they are pretty much the most rapid ones to change. Mm-hmm. And there are a number of problems. One of them is scalping with the hop oil sticking onto the packaging material. Sticking onto the inside of the crown cork, you get it's called scalping. And different crown corks and different packaging materials will give the different amounts of scalping. So, I mean, and if you read the book, you'll realize I've tried to make it as chemistry light as possible. But the fundamental point is it's horrendously complicated. You've got, you know, I don't know how many materials are in beer that influence the flavor. Let's say it's 600, 700, 800 different things.
Yeah.
You've got to control all of them.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Otherwise you lose.
Yeah.
You fail.
Now, with turbidity, you know, with the best all possible respect, any idiot can make beer bright.
That's true.
It wants to be bright.
And keep it bright.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because it's bucket loads of material. You know, you get rid of the hazy protein, you get rid of the polyphenol, you get rid of the starch, you get rid of the beta-glucan. You can have beer bright, but you can't get rid of the flavor compounds that will change. You know, one of the things is the cardboard. If you stuck on the cardboard, one of the sources of the cardboard flavor is hop bitterness. So you can't go around and say, well, hop bitterness is converted into cardboard. Let's get rid of the hop bitterness.
Right.
You can't do it.
I would love it if you could.
Let's try.
To be honest with you,
Not all of it, you wouldn't.
Well, that's true.
And
that's
you don't need very much.
No.
Because some of these staling substances, you can detect them at tiny levels. Mm-hmm. So the bottom line is, you can't hope to pick them off one at a time. You can't say, well, we'll stop that. We'll sort that.
So what do?
You have the generic approach. You keep the oxygen down. You keep it cold. Right. It really is.
It's
simple as that.
Yeah, they're all there. Just minimize.
And drink it young. And rotate the stock, you know.
Okay.
So, I mean, I used to go into a restaurant in Davis, and I would say, well, I'd like a nice fresh one, you know. And this is a beer that had a date on it. And they'd bring stuff that was hopelessly 3 months out of date. And what they do, you know, they empty it from the front, and then they fill it up from the front and leave the stuff sitting at the back.
Right.
Well, it's quite simple. Rotate the damn stuff, you know, and drink the older stuff first.
Yeah,
you know?
and as I imagine as a brewer, it's hard because as customers are getting more educated, they want these kind of canned-on dates, right, or born-on dates, right? Yeah, yeah. But for retail establishments, I imagine it's tough because if that stock isn't rotated, you're going to have people picking through. So I'll go to the store, like to the Safeway here, and I'll get Sierra Nevada Pale Ale.
Yeah.
And I've seen a month variant.
I was in
March. I went, got a six pack canned late February. I reached over a 12 pack canned in early January.
Yeah.
And that can't be something's going on.
And
that
if you don't have all that sorted out, you know, you can't tweak something. You can't blame the maltster for something.
Right.
If something's not rotating the stock.
That's true at the distribution warehouse as well. They gotta rotate there as well.
Absolutely right. So it's all the way down.
Yeah.
You know, last summer I took a class to the UK, you know, and we went to a brewery in the south of England. And they do put a best before date on beer in England. 9 months. Is what they put on.
Wow.
Which is ridiculous.
It is.
And there was beer in the warehouse in this brewery, and it was 4 months old before it had even been shipped out of the warehouse. And it wasn't a refrigerated warehouse. Yeah. So it's stale. So people are kidding themselves if they think that they're getting fresh product. They're not in some parts of the world, including England.
That seems crazy. Why would you have a 4-month back stock?
Yeah.
Clearly, you're producing too much beer.
Yeah, it's a nonsense. It's an absolute joke. But years ago, I think I tell this story in the book, I went to the... In those days, the British government used to give out money to work on beer. Far right-sighted days. So I went into Whitehall in London and went to the office there that was dishing out the money. And this guy in his pinstripe suit, he said, what would you like? And I said, well, we need to work on freshness of beer. What's the problem? I said, well, beer develops off flavors. It goes, it tends to like Tomcat, pea, and carbo. He said, do you put a best before date on? I said, yes. What is it? I said, 9 months. Why 9 months? I said, well, because in 9 months we're pretty confident it's not going to go cloudy. He said, but it can be stale. I said, yes. And do people buy it? I said, yes. He said, what's the problem? Yeah. What's the problem? And I think the problem is that if you've got the same beer and two batches of it,
yeah,
and it tastes different, I personally think there's a fundamental problem here.
Yeah.
I mean,
if you're selling beer, you want people to drink more of it.
Yeah.
And the better it is, the more they're going to drink. I mean,
Fresh beer is more drinkable.
Yes.
And the number of people have said to me, without naming names, but, you know, famous Dutch beer in a green glass bottle, and people have said to me...
Lagunitas?
What?
Sorry.
What's it supposed to taste like? What's it supposed to taste like?
Huh.
Because they've had it in Schiphol Airport, and they've had it out of a green glass bottle, and they've had it out of a can...
Yeah. And it's all different.
And it's all different. It's either fresh, skunky, or stale. What's it supposed to be? And I personally think that's a fundamental problem.
Hmm. Well, and you mentioned how important temperature is, even irrespective of oxygen.
Yeah.
What about breweries that are flash pasteurizing? Aren't they instantly staling their beer?
If you actually look at the amounts of heat involved, it's not quite so dramatic. So, I mean, 3 months at or 1 month at 30 degrees Celsius is not the same as for flash pasteurizing, you know, a few seconds at whatever it is. You know, tunnel pasteurization that we used to use in bottled beer, it was whatever it was, 62 degrees Celsius for a few minutes. 60 degrees Celsius for 24 hours is how you would age a beer to demonstrate stale flavor. So as long as the oxygen level's down, modest amounts of heat, modest amounts of flash pasteurization and tunnel pasteurization have not got a huge effect on flavor or indeed the subsequent stability. The most important thing is heat over a period of time and the oxygen.
Yeah. So why don't craft brewers pasteurize?
There's no reason why they shouldn't, quite honestly. And, you know, and again, it spills over into the it's marketing, you know. I mean, you can remember a fairly well-known brand of beer from Milwaukee, and they used to talk about cold filtered.
Right.
Well, the best of my knowledge, everybody who filters beer does it cold, you know.
Yeah.
Apart from these people who know.
They want the heat, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, of course. And saying, well, that, and then they would, you know, have lobsters dipping into boiling water inside. Yeah, that's an extreme. You know, pasteurization, as long as it's done properly, it's not huge amounts of heat. Now, the problem arises if the pasteurizer, if the line stops and there's beer sitting in the pasteurizer.
Sure.
That's when you got a problem.
Yeah.
And things do happen. You go around a brewery, it doesn't matter where you go around. The only time you ever see a problem is on the packaging line.
Something's
gone wrong.
More failure points.
Oh, yeah. And that's where, you know, it's glass over the floor. Yeah. Or, you know,
what beer and
everything. And that's the expensive bit. That's the reason why it's stop and start. But, yeah, so hopefully the book is readable, I hope. and some people it may irritate, but there's a guide to, well, how do you do this? How do you interpret that? And what do you do about it? And where's the priorities? You know.
So. Do you get a lot of pushback from some of the things that you say? Because you just mentioned that some people are going to be irritated. Yeah. Do they tell you this or?
No, they never do. But well, actually, I'll probably be bombarded with emails tomorrow.
Oh, you want the feedback?
Yeah, right. Well, you want it. You know what it is. By and large, no, but, you know, there are the brewing industry is full of opinion.
Right, yes.
Mm. It is full of opinion. And not everybody's got the same yardsticks or the same ideas. So when we're teaching the students at Davies before they're doing the exams for the Institute of Brewing and Distilling, I always say, look, you know, this is something that people have different ideas on. And oxidation is one of them. So there are people out there that are convinced that you've got to minimize oxygen pickup in the brewery, in the brew house. Mm-hmm. And I remember I've been on this radio station before talking about three letters that I absolutely detest, HSA. I love right. Yeah. And there are people who believe that it's important. Now, I'm not saying it's not absolutely unimportant, but it's not as important as the things I've just been talking about. But so I don't believe it's as important as other people do. And what I say to the students is, look, the person who's testing this paper, he or she may believe it's very important, so yeah. You better mention it. Yeah. You know, and there's other examples in the world of brewing that people... And so, you know, yeah, people have disagreed with me over the years about stuff, and usually I've been proved right.
You know, that's true, man. I mean, it's like when you go, why do I have to take this geometry class in high school? Because you have to take it to graduate.
Yeah.
So why do I have to think HSA is important? Because this person grading the paper is going to think that it's important. And yeah. But you can make up your own mind afterwards.
Because geometry is useless.
It is. I've never used it.
Never.
But I'm bad at pool, so.
The thing is, it is, you know, flavor stability, I would say freshness, mm-hmm. is probably the biggest technical challenge facing any brewer, how to do it.
Yeah.
And it means money, basically. It means money. And some people have, you know, I mentioned already one or two companies today that have, you know, they've done everything they need to do downstream. But they're still not happy with the stability of the beer. And unfortunately, I don't think they'll ever be totally satisfied. Right. Because with the best will in the world, beer is going to age.
Right.
It's
right.
just going to age. It's as simple as that. There's no magic bullet. There's nothing that you can do which will say, if I do this, it's never going to stale.
And it'll be the same as the day it went in the package.
Yeah.
Can we take out all of the organic compounds? Well, maybe then it would be stable.
Like water, yeah.
Yes, right, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, some people have tried that approach as well. But, you know, it's a tough act. So all you ask and all you can do is the straightforward things.
Let me ask you this. The new kind of, well, not new, but the push of craft breweries in this country, more and more people are fighting for shelf space.
Yeah.
Shelf space is not really growing. No. I mean, when you have places like this, like a bottle shop,
right.
That's the only place that you're going to get into kind of growing yeah. the retail. How is that affecting the drive for shelf stability? I would imagine it's harder now than it used to be.
Yeah, it doesn't make it any easier. And, you know, the ultimate is for you to have total control from start to finish.
Yeah.
Vertical integration. And back in the day with Bass, that is what we had. Because we owned, we malted our own grain, we brewed, we had our own pubs. Mm-hmm. So we looked after the beer all the way down. Mm-hmm. So the beer on tap, and that was, you know, in those days, 80% of the beer in the UK was on tap. Mm-hmm. And including cask ale. And that's, and cask condition ale, English draft cask ale, is the most sensitive beer on the planet. Mm. I mean, if you don't handle that, you've got vinegar in 3 days. You know? and yet we were damn good at it. And, you know, we'd go around and we'd check the glass cleaning and check all that. So if you do that, but if you've got your beer being served and tapped and stored or whatever by other people, that's when you run into problems. That's when things can go wrong.
So prohibition screwed us, is what you're saying.
It didn't help. It didn't help. It was one of the dumbest things that anybody has ever tried.
Let's take a phone call. See if I remember how to do this.
Oh, yeah.
Caller, you're on the phone, obviously.
Is that me? Hello.
Hello. Hello, robot voice man.
I would like to talk to Charlie, or at least ask him, and I know this is kind of a dead horse topic, but the whole packaging, New England IPAs, what's in a New England IPA, what do you think about them, all of that.
Sure, go ahead. Charlie, what do you think about packaging these hazy protein bombs, the New England IPA style? What is that about? And can you do it successfully?
If you know what you're doing, you can package pretty much anything. So, you know, the fundamental question is not whether you can or can't package it. The question is, do you want to? Mm-hmm. And will people buy it? And I think the evidence is that there are people buying beers like this.
Yeah.
I mean, if you've got particles in any beer, then it adds to the complexity in many ways. If you've got a bright beer putting into a can, you know, you're not worrying about the sort of settling and so on and so forth. So it won't be as straightforward as for a bright beer. And again, I would ask a question about how it would change with time. And it can change in one of 2 days. It can get brighter, it can get shittier. So it could go either way. Because cloudiness and haze, as we'll talk about in the next book, that is a complicated, but not as complicated as flavor stability. So the bottom line is, if you know how to package beer, you can package any beer. But it's just that some will be easier to package than others.
What would be things that would make a beer get cloudier in the package?
Well, I mean, it depends. I don't know what the turbidity is in this particular beer. I mean, earlier on you mentioned proteins and polyphenols, but there's a whole bunch of other stuff that can make beer go cloudy. I mean, starch, beta-glucans, oxalic acid, pentosans, the list goes on. So whatever it is, it could change with time. So this could get more cloudy, depending on whether there's other stuff in there that is going to come out of solution. So every beer, you know, not every beer is different, but beers can be different. Well, I've had beers in the past. In the UK, we made a beer that the turbidity, it was actually a precipitate, it looked like frog spawn. And what that was due to was two different materials, process aids that we were putting in, that were sticking together. And one was isinglass finings, the stuff that we were using to clarify the beer, and the other one was a foam stabilizer, and they stuck together and settled out like frog spawn, you know? So it's all sorts of things can happen, and I've got an email that I keep putting back and putting back and putting back. People send me emails. Well, I've got this, you know, it looks like snot. You know? And you know, it's very difficult to diagnose from a distance. You know?
Right, yeah.
Well, have you chemically analyzed it? What is the snot, you know?
Yeah. It's actually snot. I sneeze in my beer.
You know, it's mucus. Oh. It's deer semen. I'm not letting me think about that. It could change in many ways. But of course, if you've got particles in a product, they'll settle out to a greater or lesser extent.
You know? Yeah,
you know, it's like cask conditioned or bottle conditioned beers. You know, they've got a sediment in them. And how do you want it poured? Do you want it poured? Do you want it poured carefully, or do you want it rolled? That, it's all part of the story.
Excellent.
Does that answer your question there, Clayton?
Yes, sir. It sure did. Thank you very much.
Hey, you're welcome, man. Thanks for calling.
Have a good night.
All right, there. Sir, I got a sir out of that.
Well, he was talking to Charlie.
Oh, that's too bad.
In that case, I wanted your holiness.
He's an upgrade.
Yeah, please do. We'll send you a picture of his ring and you should kiss it, Clayton. Just so you guys know, White Labs has been releasing all of their yeast from the vault. And there's still time left for you to choose from a great lineup and place an order on unique specialty strains like WLP 845, Fast Lager Yeast, that is quick to ferment lagers, or WLP 564, Leeuwenhoek Saison Yeast Blend, perfect for your summertime saisons that you can't pronounce. Visit whitelabs.com/thevault and purchase a yeast strain before its cutoff date. Once all the yeast has been released, White Labs will be adding the same strains back into the vault and continually adding new ones as well. This could be your only chance to get these rare specialty yeast strains without waiting for it to collect 250 pre-orders. So don't wait. Hit up whitelabs.com/thevault. All right, Charlie, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back. And we're going to talk more with you.
Pretty good.
And you can drink a clear beer or cloudy beer, whatever you want. We're not going to judge too much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. It's a session, everyone. Hang on. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Brewcasters.
Brewcasters on the Brewing Network.
Don't you know I suffer?
Your support of the Brewing Network means everything to us. We couldn't produce shows without you. And we love giving you something extra for that support, like Brew Your Own magazine. You already know it's a great brewing magazine full of recipes, equipment how-tos, discussions of beer styles, and brewing techniques. Whether you're new to brewing and just starting out, or you're an old pro, you'll always learn something from the articles in Brew Your Own. Plus, there are amazing special issues like plans for building a Brutus 10 system, 250 classic clone recipes, and the Homebrewer's Answer Book. Brew Your Own magazine and BYO.com are awesome resources for any brewer, whether for yourself or as a gift. When you subscribe or resubscribe from the Brewing Network homepage, you directly support programs like this. Get a great magazine and support the Brewing Network. Subscribe to Brew Your Own right from the BrewingNetwork.com. Do you know the three most important rules in brewing? Sanitation, sanitation, and sanitation. And no one does it better than Five Star Chemicals. Five Star knows sanitation. You can only sanitize clean equipment. And Five Star knows how to clean, too. For craft brewers and home brewers, Five Star has what you need to keep your fermenters, serving tanks, kegs, and draft lines sparkling and free of any beer-spoiling bacteria. PBW, caustic, acid cleaners, Star Sand, Santa Clean, lubricants and defoamers, pH stabilizers, and more. Five Star Chemicals has cleaning supplies, safety supplies, heat exchangers, pumps, hoses, and valves. And Five Star is proud to offer eco-friendly products that exceed customer expectations. If you have a cleaning problem, you need the Five Star solution. Visit FiveStarChemicals.com or call 800-782-7019. 800-782-7019 and get the Five-star treatment today. Are you looking for a simple brewing system that's great for all grain brewing, but everything on the market seems to be full of compromises? Blickman Engineering has the answer. The Blickman Brew Easy All Grain Brewing System. The Brew Easy is a complete system with easy upgrades and a beautiful compact design, perfect for any size brewing location. At its core, the Brew Easy is built on two gorgeous Blickman Boilermaker brew kettles, a high temperature March pump, and either a top tier gas burner or the new boil coil electric heater. The Brew Easy adapter lid allows the pots to stack on top of each other, forming an efficient, strong, and compact brewing setup that comes in 5, 10, and 20-gallon batch sizes. Upgrade your BrewEasy system with full automated control by adding a Blickman Tower of Power temp controller, and make moving around easy with the Blickman Kettle Cart. The BrewEasy is modular. If you already own a Boilermaker kettle, you can build your BrewEasy by purchasing just the modules you need. The new BrewEasy all-grain brewing system. See it today at BlickmanEngineering.com and brew with Blickman quality on your new BrewEasy. Easy. If you work in retail sales, the restaurant industry, or are a new craft beer enthusiast, or you know someone who is, you have got to check out Beer 101. Beer 101 is an online course created for anyone wanting a quick introduction to the vast world of craft beer. Beer 101 covers the history of beer, brewing ingredients and processes, vital stats like ABV, SRM, IBU and gravity, styles, tasting, glassware, and pairing beer with food. The Beer 101 course is offered by the Brewers Association at craftbeer.com, also home to the truly awesome Beer Style Finder, a visual guide to every beer style. Quickly play with color, bitterness, and alcohol content to interactively explore the entire world of beer styles with a gorgeously designed interface to your favorite beverage. The new Beer 101 course and new Beer Style Finder are only available at craftbeer.com. Craftbeer.com, celebrating the best of American beer.
Hi, this is Wayne Wumbles from Cigar City Brewing, and you're listening to The Session on the Brewing Network.
All right, thanks for sticking with us, everybody. You know, on the topic of beer, there are more than 5,000 breweries in the U.S., and craftbeer.com Brewery Finder published by the Brewers Association, has them all. It's the most robust U.S. brewery finder. Whether you're traveling or exploring your own city, you can find breweries by current location or search in other states. You can find directions and contact info straight from the brewery finder. You'll also find breweries' social handles on the brewery finder, so you can keep up on the latest news from your favorite spots. Visit craftbeer.com and look for the brewery finder. You won't be disappointed, man. It's true. There's a lot of people out there in the world now. You need to find them all.
Right. You got to catch them all.
You got to catch them all. You know, we've talked a little bit, Charlie, about kind of online. These, you know, social media likes to pontificate, I guess, or whatever. Mm-hmm. But about this kind of millennial, the younger people who are into the beer scene, aren't as, like, brand...
loyal.
Thank you. I was thinking reliable, but that's not. Brand loyal. It seems like the modern-day beer drinker just likes to kind of play the field.
Yeah. They get around.
Yeah. But I think like even like 15 years ago, it's like, well, I like this brewery and this brewery, so whenever I go into a bar, that's what I'm getting. But now, I don't know. Do you agree with that kind
of? Yeah, I think that's right.
Did you understand the argument?
I do.
I'm not very smart.
What it basically is that they play the field and they might catch something.
Get a bad habit.
There's layers there. Yeah. There's layers there.
Yeah, I get it. People are experimenting the whole time.
Yeah.
But, you know, they many people still have a fallback position, and there's still something, you know, and there's a lot to be said for loyalty. And, you know, whatever it is, all the brewer can hope to do is to get that brand loyalty and to produce an excellent product every time. And by excellent, I mean consistent. So no matter what it is, whether it's cloudy, and I've now moved bright.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Your beer looks really nice.
It does look great.
And
this
cleared up nicely.
This is a Firestone one. So,
Brindleson.
Yeah.
Well, Matt Brindleson's got my photograph in his office. You know that.
I'm in his, too, I think.
Yeah. But David Walker made him have my photograph in his office.
Why?
Oh, really?
You never heard that story?
Why not?
You're
is the obvious
guy.
Answer, but
did I never tell you that story?
No, I don't think so.
Do you know who he is?
This was years and years ago. David Walker phoned me up. I just arrived in this country.
Yeah.
And and it was 1999. And he said, "Hello." You know, because he's English.
Sure.
Right.
And I said, "Hello, David." Just he like, said, "Do you consult?" And he said, "Yeah." I said, yeah. And he said, well, how much do you charge? So I told him, he said, well, that's not very much. I said, oh, shit, isn't it? So he said, see, this is just so cheap.
Yeah.
Why don't you come down? And those were the days when the Firestone Brewery was a poxy little brewery in the corner of the vineyard.
Okay.
So I went down there. He says, bring your wife and family down. So I went down there. And David's a good-looking guy. So he walked in, my wife... And she went, you know,
she's
fluttering her eyelashes.
Yeah, Bev does that too with him.
So he said, what do you think of the beer? I said, it smells of halitosis. it's probably the worst beer I've ever tasted in my life. And he said, why? I said, well, you got a lousy boil. It's pathetic. It's a pathetic boil. So a few weeks later.
Hear that, wife?
A few weeks later, he phoned me up. He said, you've cost me a lot of money. And I said, well, why, what have you done? He said, I bought the SLO Brewing Company in Paso Robles.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, the least you can do is send me a photograph.
Oh,
so
nice.
I sent a photograph, and underneath it, it says something like, I don't know, it says something like, you know, a great British import or something like that.
Right.
So, of course, what they really did, what the good thing was, they bought a new brewery, but they also imported Matt Brindleson, who's a very good brewer.
That's what made it
absolutely.
All
yeah.
So, you know, so Matt's got my photograph, but it's probably face down on his desk or something.
But, you know, a couple moves here and there, and it gets lost.
David will probably kill me for telling that story.
Yeah, you might have been cheap on the front end, but on the back end, the long run.
Oh, it cost him a hell of a lot of money to even associate with me.
You know? Yeah, get bad advice about his beer. I mean, like, or bad news about his beer, I should say.
Yeah. You know, one thing I wanted to talk to you about, Charlie, in the last segment, I kind of forgot. In the rundown for your for the book on freshness, you're talking a little bit about predicting flavor changes in the beer. How do you do that? How do you predict what a beer is going to taste like in 6 months or a year or whatever?
It's not possible. All you can do is predict the time taken to go stale.
Okay. I see.
And all you can do is hope to say, you know, what is the predicted shelf life on this product? And the only way to control that is in terms of the things we've talked about, keeping down the oxygen, keeping the beer cold. So there's not much you can – there really isn't much you can do. I mean, the golden rule is mm-hmm. the things we've talked about. And the other one is, hell, drink the beer as close to the brewery as possible.
Yeah.
And as young as possible.
Right.
No, as a manufacturer, you can sort of like detect what your beer is going to do by like force aging it, right?
You can. And the classic – if I'm doing experiments on flavor stability – and the classic way of doing it is 30 degrees Celsius for 1 month and then taste it, or 60 degrees Celsius for 1 day and mm-hmm. then taste it. And let me tell you, if you've got a beer that's been aged at 60 degrees Celsius for 24 hours, it doesn't taste the same as one that's 30 degrees Celsius for 4 weeks. And it doesn't taste the same as one that's room temperature for a month. So it's not a perfect thing. So all you're doing is speeding things up.
So what would that approximately age? What age would that beer be, 30 C for one?
So the thing is, the golden rule is a beer will age three times faster for every 10 degrees Celsius increase.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're 20 degrees Celsius, 3 months, look at a bottle of Bud, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's got a born-on date and it says 110 days, okay? So it's just over 3 months. Mm-hmm. So you increase by 10 degrees Celsius, so you go to 30 degrees Celsius a month, and you go to 60 degrees Celsius, you work it out, it comes out to a beer a day. Now, beer doesn't taste the same way, and if you store a beer warm, it exaggerates the cardboard. Whereas if you store it naturally, it doesn't. It's not so much cardboard, it's got other characteristics. It's more grainy, it's more straw, more wine-like.
Okay.
The ultimate insult is wine-like or sherry-like.
Your tastes like wine.
Yeah. And that's because different chemical reactions, they accelerate at different rates at different temperatures.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, it just all adds to that complexity, you know. And people, they've got all sorts of ways they try to predict the shelf life. And there really isn't a very good way. I mean, oxygen level in the beer prior to any pasteurization, that's the test. The oxygen level. Mm. Now, some people use electron spin resonance spectroscopy.
Oh, Jesus. I think I had that done to me a couple months ago.
Yeah.
Outpatient, right?
Some of the big brewers use it, and it helps to predict it, but it's not the ultimate test.
Right.
The ultimate test is, what does it taste like?
Yeah.
Okay. Huh.
Mm.
If you can make it happen.
Yeah.
I've
heard a few brewers talk about they kind of have an average of, you know, 6 months shelf life for their beer. That seems like too long now, especially after this conversation.
Well, that would depend on the beer, of course. I mean, that's
even like a pilsner. Like I've it's a long time for a pilsner. I'm like, I don't understand from a pilsner from East Coast here.
And unless you know what its provenance is and what its history is and what it's been exposed to, somebody contacted me a while ago and they got some sort of label they were developing that changed color.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
And it would change color and it would give you a track record of what that had been exposed to. And I said, you know, some brewers would buy that.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of brewers would say, "Get that away from me."
When the U.S. brewers export to Europe, they don't want dates on it.
No,
why?
Because
it's all going to be old.
Yeah.
Right? They'll just turn it back at the dock. It's unsaleable.
I'll tell you one other story about freshness. I when I first arrived over here, I took a well-known beer, which I won't name, but it had an eagle floating across it, and we put it in the oven for a month at 30 degrees Celsius.
Wow.
And we compared it with a fresh one, and we went into Sacramento. In those days, Sudwerk had a brewery and an outlet in Sacramento near to Cal Expo.
Okay.
And we went there, and we presented this beer, the fresh and the stale, and we put them on two mats that had the name of the beer brand on it, and 50% went for the fresh, and 50% went for the stale.
Really?
Wow.
And then we did the same thing, and each one, a fresh and a stale, on two white mats, and 50% went for the fresh, and 50% went for the stale. And then we took the stale version of it, and we put it in both glasses, and we put one on the brand mat, and one on a plain white mat, and they voted 2-1 for the one on the white mat. And then we took the fresh one in both glasses, same beer, both glasses, fresh, put one on a branded mat, one on a white mat, and they voted 2-1 for the one that was branded. So people, they're buying a brand. That's the first thing they're buying in.
Right.
But then, if they're presented with something and they're saying, oh, shit, I don't like the taste of that, they'll go for something else, you know. So it's horrendously complicated, you know.
My God.
And the company concerned, they phoned me up and said, Charlie, Charlie, why did you do that?
It's like you found them out. You pulled the curtain back.
I said, because I'm an independent academic spirit.
That's right.
So your picture's not in their office.
No, it's not.
You didn't get an endowment from them, did you?
No. And you can't trust me to do anything.
But oddly enough, he sent Matt Brunson another one.
So, as a result.
Yeah, it's just a weird thing. Huh. We have a phone call, Bev?
Hope it's not Matt Brunson.
I hope it's not the company concerned.
I'm looking at this picture on my desk.
Is it David Walker?
It might be. You never know. Bev's just, she's just hanging out. She's doing it. Now she's chatting. Yeah. Nothing, Bev. I'm just joking with you. That sounds, I don't know, man. It sounds complicated. It sounds like it's almost impossible for beer to have grown the way it's doing if there's all of these staling compounds and things that affect the freshness that you kind of have no control over, especially as a small to medium size.
Well, you do. Brewery. As I say, you do have control. All you can hope to do is to make your fresh beer and be satisfied that it's the beer that you want. Mm-hmm. And if you control the raw materials, you control the process, you do everything consistently, you can make the beer you want. But the point is that it's as soon as you've done that, it's, you know, the clock is now ticking.
Okay.
The clock is now ticking. And if it's a very alcoholic beer, it's ticking in a possibly in a positive direction. But if it's not, it's ticking in a negative direction. And so basically, the younger it is, the better. But, you know, I remember there was a guy from a very famous international brewing company once, and he stood up in front of a meeting and he said, you know, I think what the brewer should do is make the beer as stale as possible on the basis it's never going to get any worse than that. And and that's another strategy, you know.
I think breweries have built their entire reputation on doing that.
I think that speaks to everything about its control. And there's countries in the world where the beer typically is stale, and they can't clean it up. Because that's what people are used to. It's what people are used to drinking. It comes back full circle to the point we made earlier on. You know, if somebody's used to something and that's where they're expecting it, you know, well, that's what you got to give them.
Didn't Heineken do that years ago? Didn't they switch from the green bottles to the brown bottles, and then it was some other brand like that? Maybe I don't know. And then
it didn't taste that way.
It didn't taste the same.
Yeah. Right.
And then just like what you said, everyone's like, "Well, I don't want it anymore." So they went back to the green bottles, even though the brown bottles are better.
Right. Yeah. And it's the image, the brand image. You don't screw with it. You know.
Yeah. But what about enjoying a beverage? It has the flavor that you expect.
Yeah.
Because you miss it. You're like, I want that.
That's right.
Skunky flavor.
Yeah.
I'm glad Sam Smith's changed, because I will pick up a bottle of Sam Smith's now. They went from the clear to the brown. That nut brown is delicious.
You know, that's the only brewery I've ever been denied access to.
Really?
And I got further than anybody. I got into the head brewer's office.
Oh, wow.
They're so secretive. They don't let anybody in.
Huh. You know? Jeez.
And so I got into the brewmaster's office and said, you can't go any further. This is it. What? So I don't know what the secret is. Or not.
Right.
There weren't any windows.
I think probably know enough that if you saw it, you'd get it.
They got a herd of deer in there.
I do have a question from the chat here. Says, can you please ask, with the accelerated aging, do you notice a difference in flavor due to there being different activation energies at different temperatures?
That's exactly what is happening. That's clearly a chemist who's asking that.
Yeah, I mean, activation energies.
Yeah, different chemical.
Or a holistic healer, I don't know.
You know, it's, and I suspect whoever's asked that question knows all about Arrhenius. So Svante Arrhenius is the guy who first came up with this relationship between the rate at which a chemical reaction occurs and the temperature. And what he said was that some reactions go twice as fast. You increase the temperature 10 degrees, some will go twice as fast, some will go three times as fast.
And they're not linear, probably a lot of
it's not linear.
Yeah. Right.
So, you know, and that's why, you know, when you age it at 30 degrees, you don't exactly recreate what you would get by just holding it at 20. Mm-hmm. And at 60, you don't get exactly what you got.
Or even the up and down. Even the up and down they might
correct.
Have.
Yeah. Yeah. Correct. So, I think he's a chemist, the person who just has that.
It's just an approximation. The storing warm is just an approximation to see what it would be like if it was actually cooked.
Correct. So it's you know, if you want to do a flavor stability experiment, what are you going to do? You're going to test, and then you wait for 3 months. Or you're going to say, well, I want the results in 24 hours.
Yeah, right, so exactly.
That's the reason you do
it. Yeah.
And the other thing, the other point I make in the book is this, that a lot of public papers are published on flavor stability, and this fancy ways of improving flavor stability. But it's how they do the experiment. The standard way in which they do the experiment, they make a change, so they may make a change in a malt, okay? And then they take it all the way through the process, and then they get the finished beer, and they force age it for a month at 30 degrees Celsius, and they taste it. And they don't tell you how many people tasted it. You know, maybe one person, it might be four people, you know, and they'll say, well, on a scale of one, which is fresh, to five, this is disgusting. You know, the control, where we didn't make any precautions, you know, it's four. Mm-hmm. And the trial, we've done this, we used a different malt, and it was 3.6, you know. And they say, that's so much better, you know.
Yeah, right.
And that's the sort of quality of the information
that's
you get in
science,
the scientific literature. It's not scientific. Hmm. And, of course, from malt going into a process, there's all the different variables all the way down the line. And they don't tell you the experiment, well, 20 times, trials and 20 controls, and this is the average of what we got. They probably don't need it once, you know.
Yeah.
And how good a teacher do you have in front of you?
Correct. I know. And how well trained were they?
Yeah.
And was that 3.5 plus or minus 0.1 or plus or minus 1?
Standard,
you know?
I mean, deviation.
You know, and it's nonsense. And that's how it's presented. So the point I'm making in the book is it's actually not the intensity of flavor. It's, you know, how long can you hold a beer until you go, it's gone. It's gone. So it's just like haze and like turbidity, to come back to another theme here.
Right.
You know, how long will a beer last before it goes cloudy? And that's what people ask. But when it comes to freshness, they say, well, how stale is it? It's not how stale it is. How long before it changed?
Right.
That's what matters, you know.
Right.
So you should measure flavor stability on a time axis and not on a flavor intensity axis. And people don't do it.
I wouldn't do it.
No,
because I don't know how.
Never,
no, yeah. No.
I don't. That's why I never measure anything.
Well, that's another strategy as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's better just to not know.
Just break it quick.
Yeah. Here's another question from the chat, Charlie. When doing a step mash, let's shift gears a bit. What guidelines can you give us for the amount of time spent at each mash rest temperature? in 140 characters or less, please.
Yeah, but don't do it. You know, one of the actual things that, you see, have we established the fact that flavor stability is complicated?
Yes.
But there are some people out there who would link it all to an enzyme in the grain called lipoxygenase. And what they would say is, you've got to minimize that enzyme from working. And to work, you need the enzyme, you also need oxygen. If you eliminate the oxygen, the enzyme can't work. But the enzyme doesn't like heat. So there's a guy who's, you know, he's sadly dead now, but for years he went around talking about flavor stability, and he would simply say, mash in at the highest temperature you can. So the bottom line, if there is any influence of the brew house on flavor stability, it does not make sense to do decoction mashing and schlepping liquid from one tank to another to change the temperature. It makes sense to have one vessel and to mash in at the highest possible temperature you can, as long as you get starch degradation.
Are there people that do decoction mashing and believe in hot side aeration?
Yep. Yes.
How do they justify stirring the decoction?
They don't. I mean, some of the early work on oxidation in mashes was done in Germany. And so none of it makes sense, you know. So the bottom line is, if this enzyme really is important, and I have my doubts, but if it's really important for flavor stability, then the golden rule is you mash in as close to 65 Celsius as you can. Mm-hmm. You don't go in at a lower temperature, and you mash at the lowest pH you can, and that would be 5.1. So you have an acidified mash, and that will cut down the rate of that enzyme from working.
Does that answer your question, Warren?
My question?
Yeah.
Yes. Know.
Answered a question I didn't even know I had.
Right, yeah.
I'm writing this shit down. Yeah, some real wisdom there. Yeah. I'm going to play that back myself.
We just last week had a very successful lager brewery on that does a two-step sacrification mash schedule. Is there any validity to doing that, in your opinion? Doing like a 140, well, sorry.
Could you speak English?
Yeah, sorry. like 162 rest, and then after holding it there for a while, raising it up to 165, 166?
No. No. I mean, I'm a great believer in keeping things as simple as possible.
The brewer's German, if that helps.
He is, yeah.
Keep it as simple as possible. You know, the simpler it is, the less it's going to vary. And, you know, starch degradation, it's all about the relative stability of two key enzymes, alpha and beta amylase, and gelatinization. And I don't see any advantage to subtle fluctuations in the temperature in that region. A lot of people talk about a low temperature stand. Some people call it a proteolytic stand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's strong evidence that there's no proteolysis at that stage. It's all about glucan breakdown, beta-glucan. But if you've got good malt, good homogeneous malt, you shouldn't even need that. So, you know, keep it simple. Infusion mashing at 65 Celsius, that sort of temperature is, in my opinion, the way to go.
Hmm.
But I'm English.
Right, that's true. You guys invented that.
Yeah.
Let's just keep it simple.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about the program at Davis and the brewery at UC Davis. We were talking a little bit before the show about how some of the tools that you guys have there have helped develop new products and new processes.
You know, it's a different world now. We, in terms of what I inherited and what I've got now, we got really great facilities. So we've got a great 1.5-barrel brew house, and we've got 4 smaller breweries, actually, from Morbier.
Oh, nice.
But they were converted. They're the brew sculptures, but they've been converted to electric.
Okay.
Because the university, in their wisdom, would not let us have open flames.
Oh.
So they were converted into electric base, but they work very, very well. So these are 5-gallon breweries. And we just take receipt of 16 fermenters. They're all made in JV Northwest.
Oh.
A former student of mine whose day job is the winemaker at the Screaming Eagle, so he makes very expensive wine, but you know, he made us these brewery fermenters because he's passionate about beer.
Oh.
And they were paid for by Carlos Alvarez from Gambrinus.
Very generous.
Nice. Actually, he rounded it up to $1 million, so there's a lot of other equipment on board as well.
Wow.
So we got these beautiful 16 individually temperature-controlled fermenters, and each one is regulated by a program. So my brewer, Joe Williams, wherever he is in the world with his phone, he can
look it up
what the temperature is and switch on the cooling or take off the cooling, wherever he is in the world.
Nice.
It's fancy.
Yeah.
And they're 5-gallon size?
They're 5-gallon. No, those are 15-gallon. 15-gallon fermenters for 5-gallon brewers. So, you know, we can do all these changes with different hop varieties and different yeast strains and whatever you want. And lots of other equipment. We're bringing in a new malt house from Australia soon. We just bought buying in a mash filter, a hammer mill. Lots of new analytical equipment. So we're very well equipped now. So what we were talking about earlier on, Jason, the brewery is available to people to buy time on, so people can actually come and do trials with us. And
oh, really?
We've helped a number of people in this way. So you might have a supplier company that wants to evaluate new malt or a new stabilizing treatment or something.
Huh.
But also, we've helped a couple of people make beers recently, a couple of gluten-free beers, low-gluten beers.
Okay.
So there's a beer called Buck Wild. That is made out of buckwheat, and we did a lot of work in developing that brand. And one called Sufferfest, and that is another gluten-free beer that basically was developed at UC Davis. So it's a great source of income to our program.
Sure.
But also it allows people to trial their ideas and test out their ideas. So
do you have a centrifuge there?
We're getting a centrifuge. We are getting a centrifuge, and we're about to take receipt of a new cross-flow filtration system from
Pinnater. Nice.
And you know, we've come a long way. So we equipment-wise, and I've got a great brewer now, Joe Williams, who's actually doing his PhD with me as well. And he is, you probably read about it, but Ken Grossman.
He's in doubt.
Yeah, Ken Grossman and Katie Gonser, Ken and Katie, they gave $2 million of their own money to establish the Sierra Nevada endowed brewer position. So that's, I mean, we're thrilled with that. Awesome. It is no secret that he, in my opinion, he's the top guy.
For sure.
And I said that before he gave us a $2
million. No, I've said it before as well.
Yeah, he's really, done a lot.
He
that's
really
for sure.
No. He's astonishing. I've been in the industry. It'll be 40 years when I retire.
True pioneer.
And he is, you know, he's such a humble guy. And, you know, I mean, he's the best.
He doesn't miss a thing. He always, when he sees the good thing to do about beer, he does it. You know,
I don't know if you've ever been to the brewery in North Carolina, but, I mean, my God. Yeah. It's astonishing.
It looks great.
I was there, and I was in the men's room, and I was washing my hands, and Steve Grossman, Ken's brother, was right next to me, and he couldn't get his faucet to work. And he said, Keddie will fix it.
He would. He'll probably get down there underneath the sink and actually fix it instead of just going, hey, we have a thing now.
Yeah. I mean, Chico is the second most beautiful brewery in the world.
Yeah. It's great.
Mm-hmm. I was up there at the weekend and Steve Dressler retired.
Oh, no, were you there for that? Cool.
I was there on Saturday for that.
That's awesome.
And that was, it's nice. I mean, Steve.
That's a good dude. Yeah. We've had him on a couple times.
The all-American boy. When I came over here, he was the epitome of what I thought an American boy was.
Oh, really? Tall, long hair.
Yeah, I still call him the all-American
surfer
boy.
Surfer dude.
Yeah. That's what I thought you all looked like.
Yeah.
Right. And then I saw this guy here. Yeah. So I realized, ZZ Top is the...
That's what we all want to look like.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You guys need to find somebody better to look like.
That's true.
I actually had somebody in one of my short courses, which we perhaps will get on and discuss in a minute.
Yeah.
But I had one guy, and he had a beard like this. I mean, he looked like this guy.
Okay.
And I was so rude about, the hideous growth, and all the... All the great globules of grease. And next day, gone. The whole bloody lot was gone.
It was as long as Warren.
Oh, he was, yeah.
Really?
I mean, he made him look clean shaven, this guy.
Jeez.
And he said, I said, oh, dear. He said, he was from Austin, Texas. And he said, my wife has never seen me clean shaven before. So he went home, and a week later, he wrote to me and he said, dear Charlie, my wife isn't talking to me. Yeah. My children don't know who I am, but the foam is fantastic.
That's cool.
So if he comes in clean shaven next time, it's not my fault.
No.
I've seen you before, and I still have it.
Yeah, you do.
We'd probably thank you if that happened.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
You passed around a copy of his driver's license before. You wouldn't know that's worn underneath the thing. So because in his driver's license, he's freshly shorn, right?
Yeah.
Night and day.
Really?
I don't think we'd recognize him if he walked in without a beard.
No. Yeah. No.
I'll shave and then sign up for one of your classes, and then I'll sit in it.
See
if you notice.
Under a pseudonym.
Right. I'll fail one of your classes, and then you'll recognize me.
Well, that's the other thing. That's the other thing we use the brewery for. We actually use it for classes, obviously, on campus.
Yeah. Let's talk about your short classes.
But we do, 4 times a year, we do a class called Introduction to Practical Brewing. And we get a lot of home brewers on that.
Okay.
And they're from, some people come from larger brewing companies. They may come from a non-technical function. They want enough information to be dangerous.
Yeah.
But primarily, we get a lot of home brewers. And, the first hour or so, I bring them up to speed, everybody to the same playing field, because some know more than others.
Mm-hmm.
And then they brew with Joe on the 1.5 barrel scale. And then... classroom, and then on the Wednesday they brew again on the small scale, and the Thursday classroom, and the Friday we wrap it all up, and then we taste their beer. We taste the beer that it's a very young beer from the Monday, but we invite them to bring in their own beers for critical acclaim. Or otherwise. And and they present the beer, and they've been with me for 4.5 days, and they say, "Well, I know I shouldn't have done this, and I know I shouldn't have done this, but let's just taste it anyway." And I'm always very kind, but. But we have a lot of fun, and that's Monday through Friday lunchtime, and again four times a year. So if you go to my website, Bamforth or whatever, beer.
Bamforth or whatever, beer.com?
Yeah, no.com, just so whatever.
I don't know what the website, I don't know what it is, but put Bamforth and beer and go to click on short courses. And you'll come to that. It's called Introduction to Practical Brewing.
There's one coming up on August 21st.
Yeah. I think that's one, there's one before that, which is sold out.
Yeah, sold out. It's a waiting list or something.
And the next one, and we, every Thursday we actually go to a brewery to tour. And the next one, I think we're going to Berry Esser to see Chris at Berry Esser. The last time, I think they went to Rubicon. We go to Sudwark. We go to...
Rotating.
Heretic.
Heretic. We've been to Heretic. Yep. And so we take people around to get a feel for some of these brewers. So we get them all, people from all over, you know, and some come internationally for this.
So I don't see your website, but I do have, I do find you on ratemyprofessors.com.
Oh.
So in case you thought that online rating sites were only for beer.
We should have had him read his own
ratemyprofessors.com.
I do know they have chili factors in there for hotness, but I, I don't think I rate.
This one person, this one person gave you a 4.5 for overall quality, 3.0 for level of difficulty.
Right.
So maybe you're not difficult enough. The comments are,
right.
I wish that I could have taken all of my classes from Professor Bamforth. He's easily one of the best, if not the best, instructors at UC Davis, and I feel privileged to have been in his class, signed someone with the initials of CB. I don't know who that is.
Cost me a lot of money, that one. No, I would never look at my own publicity and so on, but we enjoy it, and that's the main thing.
Well, but the class you did on, like, I don't know, for the general students, in terms of, like, joy of brewing, home brewing, or just joy of brewing.
Introduction to beer.
That was like, everybody loved that class. I mean,
yeah, it became the most popular class on campus. Yeah. It pushed the class on sex into second place, actually, so... But that'd be a good dual study. Yeah, and that one is now online. So we're actually doing that this quarter online, and I think they recorded me for before I died or something. But
you'll be a hologram in 20 years.
The same bloody jokes.
That's why they're letting you retire next year.
Someone like that.
They got you recorded.
But I enjoyed it. I've enjoyed it. But I don't have the same sort of feeling, you know.
Your stand-up feel. You're a funny guy.
Yeah.
I like the spittle on the student's face.
Okay.
So you can't get that the same way.
You can't.
You can only imagine it.
But it's it's been fun, and that's we're teaching that throughout the UC system. So there are students in other campuses in the UC system taking the class, and so it's going to grow and grow and grow, and hopefully there'll be hopefully we'll throw it up beyond that. And so if you got 50 people listening, you might as well have 50,000, mightn't you?
Right. Yeah, that's the beauty of the old interwebs.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Charlie, I think we'll let you go. I think we caught you and we'll
let
release
you. Let you go.
Well, like you're fired.
Head of the FBI. Yeah. We're going to let you go.
We're going to feed you those handcuffs.
Yeah. We're actually going to tell you in person, not let you find out about it from a news broadcast behind you.
That's kind of you. You're just good people.
Yeah. We try, man. We try. Right. Yeah.
Let me look at the size of your hands.
You don't want to do that. It'll scare you.
Nice.
No, really, thank you for coming in.
My pleasure.
And congratulations on the new book.
Thank you.
And you can get that. You can go to the Master Brewers Association of the Americas or MBAA.com and go in the store there. You can't miss it. Freshness, Practical Guides for Beer Quality. And again, there's a 3-book series. You can save a few bucks. Actually, more than that, 40 bucks. You can save 40 bucks, dude.
A lot of knowledge right there.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
But that's in your budget.
Yeah.
I tell you, I learned a lot about just reading the description. So you'll get a lot of it just from reading the books, I guarantee you.
His Essays in Brewing Science is one of my favorites that I've read in the last year.
Thank you.
Should have brought it in. He'll tear it up for you.
Oh, he could have signed it.
Throw it in your face.
Perfect. Either one.
Have you read my book on Wolverhampton Wanderers goalkeepers? That sounds
over my head.
But I've been meaning to.
You haven't asked your Liverpool question yet.
I haven't had because I feel
football.
Ridiculous.
But that's the other thing your listeners might, if you go to a website called www.wolvesheroes.com.
Wolves Heroes.
And
knows that website.
I know that
but
website.
Not his own.
And that's where, and you go into the search, you put my name in the search, you'll find lots of articles I've written about people I've interviewed and that's where I kept my kicks,
That's nice. Your thing.
Yeah,
that's your nice. That's your hobby. Thing. I can't find that website.
Wolverhampton Wanderers is the other well-known supporter is Robert Plant.
That's right.
I think we've had that story before.
But yeah.
Logan, of course. Yes. Logan. I first met Logan when he was knee-high to
a kid. Yeah.
Yeah. And now he, of course, has a brewery.
And he's making some kick-ass beers.
And he is. And, of course, still a very big fan of Wolverhampton Wanderers Football Club.
I think you have to, right?
Does he let you in his brewery?
Yes, he does.
I tell you, he was on our show remotely, of course, and he was super generous with the amount of beer that he sent over, and the quality was amazing.
Yeah,
and so for a for a football fan, he did okay.
Yeah, he's a good guy. Right. We've done a couple of UC events at his breweries, the old one and the later place in Tottenham Hale. UC events there with Logan. We've done a double header and so on, but
that's cool.
He's a good guy.
Before we take a break, I do want to tell you guys, the folks at GrogTag have unleashed another label site based on customer feedback. It's called CheapAssLabels.com. It's proud to offer one-time use paper labels for your custom labeling needs. With CheapAss Labels, you get your awesome single-use paper labels printed on the same high-quality printers that GrogTag uses, but at a cheaper price, which means more labels for your home-brewed beer, wine, kombucha, whatever the heck you make, they can label it for cheap. So if you're in the market for some great-looking labels at cheap-ass prices, head over to cheapasslabels.com.
Cheap.
Cheap-ass,
How much are the labels there?
I think they're like 19 cents a piece or something like that.
Nice.
They're super cheap because the grog tags are reusable. They're on vinyl, and so it's a much high-quality product. But
The cheap ones are cheap.
A lot of people don't need them.
And homebrewers
are
cheap.
They don't want them. And homebrewers are cheap-ass.
Yeah.
And right?
I'll get one.
One.
Just one label.
One. One single-use label.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Photocopy.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to do feedback and maybe bullshit a little bit. But, yeah, it's time to release Charlie back into the wild so he can return to us, which is everything that you do.
I recognize that music.
Yeah. If you love something, you set it free.
That's true. All right, this is Session. Hang on. We'll be right back.
Listening to the Brewcasters on the Brewing Network.
Since 1979, Williams Brewing has offered the finest equipment and freshest ingredients and the best customer service in the business. Check out their brand new patent-pending mash and boil 110-volt electric mashing and boiling unit. This compact all-stainless unit lets you mash, sparge, and boil just about anywhere that has a 110-volt plug. Double wall construction adds to efficiency and safety, and a precise thermostat keeps temperatures where you want them. Unlike insulated buckets and converted coolers, multiple temperature rest mashing is easy to do, all for under $300. They also feature the Mark II work pump, a magnetic drive high temperature pump that does the work of pumps that cost twice as much, as well as exclusive Brewer's Edge regulators and quality Keg King kegs and disconnects. Check them out today at williamsbrewing.com to brew their vast selection.
With over 20 years of experience making world-class craft beer and more than 100 gold medals in international competitions, Moylan's Brewing Company is not just a pretty face in craft beer. Just ask Brendan Moylan.
What do we got here? The beer of the hour. Moylan's, gotta love that big M. It's like a sign of awesomeness. Woo-hoo! It's got an extra kick to it. Let's pour this bad boy. Oh, Moylan's. The end of the night when the kids are finally in bed, the wife's in bed, nobody's bothering your ass anymore. That's Moylan's time. Moylan's is for you.
Yeah!
It's to help you out.
Yeah.
It helps me out.
What?
Well, because it's freaking awesome. Northern California brewed. It's brewed with love.
With love?
Oh, yeah. Tremendous. And it's always best where?
Moylan's.
You gotta try it on tap at Moylan's in Novato. They're freaking awesome. Not only because I own the brewery, because I love the beer.
Cheers.
Boom.
Kilt Lifter Scotch Ale takes big beers to a whole new level with rich malt balanced perfectly with delicate hops, and now comes in four pack tall boy cans so you can take the party on the go. Or come to the brewery, take a tour, and try any of Moylan's fresh creations right from the source. Check them out at Moylan's.com.
Army, have you heard the latest at Hop Tech? Since Hop Tech has doubled in size after a huge expansion, Jade and Roberto can stock even more of the best quality homebrewing supplies and equipment. Over 60 kick-ass varieties of hops and malts. Monster truckloads of quality brewer's yeast, including White Labs, Y yeast, and multiple dry yeasts. They even have all grain systems from Grainfathers and Ruby Street Brew Systems, thanks to Jade, the brand new all-grain brewer. And don't forget about their 10% discount to all BN Army members. Jade and Roberto are waiting for you and all of your brewing questions over at hoptech.com. HopTech, totally not sucking since 1983.
Hey guys, what'll it be?
I'm not sure. What do you recommend?
A lot of people seem to like the Hefeweizen.
Is that a German Hefeweizen or more of an American-style wheat beer?
I'm not sure, but I can give you a taste.
Okay, great.
The Cicerone Certification Program certifies and educates beer professionals in order to elevate the beer experience for consumers. Unfortunately, not every bar is staffed with certified beer servers who can guide their customers through a beer list.
Here you go, guys. Let me know what you think of the Hefeweizen.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely more of an American wheat. But I can hardly tell because this beer just smells like sour butter. I wonder how long it's been since they cleaned the draft line.
Yeah, and look at the bubbles on the side of the glass. It's filthy.
Somebody should tell these guys about the Cicerone program.
For sure. How about we head somewhere else for another beer?
Your server should give beer the same respect you do. Request quality. The Cicerone Certification Program offers 4 levels of beer certification, in-person classes, and course books for beer professionals. Check them out at Cicerone.org. The Cicerone Certification Program. We know beer.
Hey, my brewing brothers and sisters. This is Jamel Zainashev, and I want to tell you about Heretic Evil Twin. You might be familiar with my homebrew recipe, which uses massive late hopping to create a balance between the malty sweet and the hoppy bitter, along with an outrageous malt and hop character. I wanted a beer with the same bold hop and malt character, so we played around with the homebrew recipe until we were able to make a great commercial version too. We've created a beer rich in malt character, full of caramel, toast, biscuit, and an ever so subtle roast note. On top of that, we piled in an insane amount of Citra and Columbus hops at the end of the boil, as well as in dry hopping. This damn the cost approach to hopping gives Heretic's Evil Twin a great blast of citrus and tropical fruit that can't be matched by any other hop. The result is a bold, malty, hoppy, but easy drinking beer. This is our top seller, our flagship beer, and I couldn't be prouder of it. Cheers.
To find Heretic beers near you, click on Find Some at hereticbrewing.com.
Hey, motherfuckers, this is Doug from fucking Society. You're listening to The Session on the fucking Bruin Network. Fuck you.
Hey, everybody, thanks for sticking with us. We're going to do some feedback.
Great.
But first, I want to tell you guys about Dr. Lambic and his Sour Beer Blog team have been the longest-running sponsors of the Sour Hour, apparently. And now they're opening a sour and farmhouse-focused brewery in central Pennsylvania. Help them get started. Join their Founders Club, which includes 8 exclusive bottles of club-only aged and blended sour beer, early access to all of their public bottle releases, a hooded sweatshirt, a pair of tasting glasses, a club growler, and a metal challenge coin, not to mention discounts and more. To learn more and join the Founders Club, check out Mellow Mink of Brewing at mellowmink.com. I love the crunch of paper, yeah. Dude. I love throwing paper.
That's the sound of things happening.
That's right. That is the sound of live reads going away, man. We have so many. But I love it.
Good thing we're live.
Good thing we're live, baby. So we can read. Okay, let's do some feedback. We don't have a Twitter game, but if we did, the Twitter game would have been brought to you by the Wine and Hop Shop.
Oh.
They're good people. Go to wineandhopshop.com. We just didn't have a Twitter game today, so no fault of theirs.
Yeah. I think Twitter doesn't exist anymore.
I think it's gone. I heard that.
It's dying. I read a tweet this morning that says it's not here anymore.
That says it's gone already.
Yeah.
That's too bad. But this is feedback, and is brought to you by the Beer Law Center. Go to beerlawcenter.com. John is over there helping you protect your trademark, kind of guide you through the process of opening a brewery, all that kind of stuff. His book is coming out at some point soon, and like I said, I've read a little bit. I like it. It's easy to understand.
Just a little bit.
Look, when you write forwards for books, Warren, you don't read the whole book.
Oh.
You skim.
I mean, I've never written one, so you would know.
When I write my memoirs, I'll let you write the forward, yeah. Maybe.
Oh,
I'll
perfect.
Just put you in the running.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
You know what I forgot to do? I wanted to tell
I forget where I even said this, if I said it here or if I said it before the show. Did I talk about session beers on the show?
What about session beers?
That I hate them? Like, I'm over them.
No, I don't think that was on the show.
You know, because I was going to ask Charlie to help me with this problem of session IPAs.
Okay.
They all taste the same.
Like a pale ale.
Like, not even a pale, just like malt water with bitterness. And at first I was kind of into it because, like, oh, okay, because I enjoy bitterness, but I can drink the alcohol, you know, because I don't want the alcohol. Mm-hmm. And I was having Session IPA from Pizza Port. Okay. Fine beer.
Sure.
4.5%. I liked it. And I dumped out the can. I couldn't finish it because I'm just like, I'm tired of this flavor. And then every other Session IPA I've ever had in my entire life tastes exactly the same. And I'm bored with it. I'm bored with Session IPAs.
Maybe you're ready to move up to regular IPA.
I don't want to drink the alcohol. Like, right now I'm drinking a 3.7% brown ale, which is a mild.
But you drink whiskey with a little water.
Yeah, but on very rare occasions.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? When I want to feel bloated, I reach for session beers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I don't know. It was just one of those things, man. Like, I was at the store, and I realized I'm shopping more by alcohol percentage than I am about style now.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
Like, style to me, I mean, it's important because I would like to know what I'm getting.
Sure.
But I look at more alcohol percentage. And then I go, okay, well, I'll grab that. So I grabbed 2 6-packs, and they were both happened to be kind of these session pale-esque IPA things.
Yeah.
And I don't know, that's kind of seems what the market is. It's session IPAs, and I don't know. I'm waiting for someone to bring something exciting back instead of a spin on an IPA.
In the low alcohol
category. Low alcohol category, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like maybe a dark English mild.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
I don't know. You see what I'm saying? Like, yeah. You know, as far as like craft beer goes and like we're, you know, oh, it's so progressive and we're trying to push the envelope or whatever. All we're doing is we're polishing we're putting lipstick on a pig. Well, right? It's the same thing over and over again, just different variations.
Well, it's still beer. It's just whatever you can add to beer to get it to sell to the next person.
Yeah, and I don't know. I feel really old about it. Speaking of old.
Yes.
It's time to replace that old dog-eared copy of John Palmer's How to Brew.
Oh, boy.
The Brewers Publications have just published the 4th edition of How to Brew, and it's essentially a totally new book. It clocks in at over 600 pages, and every chapter has been updated and expanded. There are 5 totally brand-new, 100% spanking-new chapters. Whether you want simple, surefire instructions for making your first beer or a seasoned home brewer working with all grain batches, this book has something for you. Got something for your ass. Ingredients and methods to recipes and equipment, it's loaded with a bunch of stuff. So check it out. Brewerspublications.com. How to Brew.
Yeah, it's a lot thicker than
it really
my version.
Is. It's huge, man.
I mean, I know everyone's version is different, but John's making me feel self-conscious now.
Well, you know, he should. Okay, feedback. Brought to you by Beer Listener.
Right.
This one's called Rage Outlet. Greetings, Taint Waffles and Bebo. Thank you for allowing me to air my issues on air during your last episode. It was cathartic to expunge the sand from my special areas on air to an audience that knows rage. Unfortunately, as is the case with most dry hump blue balls situations, my anticipation ended badly. No trip to NHC Nationals for my apparently mediocre homebrew. Congrats to JP on getting his stout through. Maybe if he wins, they'll replace the picture on the NHC website with his. Then I'd know that when I'm busy clicking refresh for the results next year, the guy I want to kick the dick in at least deserves it.
So his WAD was complaining about the judging.
Probably.
And the rate.
I honestly don't remember.
Of results.
Yeah, probably. Anger issues aside, I would like to give a sincere shout out to the NHC organizers in the Sacramento region. The lack of judges, I'm sure, made for a special kind of shit show. Thank you for your hard work and getting the competition done. Okay.
Yeah.
And thank you to the BN for giving me so much material to use going forward. I've registered for the forums as Dick Ripper. and because I was talking about ripping my dick off by the root. And I intend to christen my new double IPA recipe, Rip the Root.
Right from the root.
As a thank you, at long last, I've ended my period as a freeloader and enrolled as a corporal in the BN Army.
Wow. Thank you, sir.
Cheers and keep up the great work. Zeb, a.k.a. Dick Ripper.
Oh. Yeah, that's the guy who called in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to rip that shit off at the root, Bev.
Stop it.
That's the best place to rip it.
Oh, my God. So... You guys are a fan of Cops. Everyone's a fan of Cops.
Love them.
Everyone loves Cops. The show Cops.
The police or both?
I just thought those guys in the uniform.
Yeah, well, both.
Like
but the
hot
TV show Cops. Not hot, just Cops.
Oh, okay.
Straight up Cops.
Oh, the funny one? I don't know. I don't watch it.
Okay. But, okay.
Actually, I'm not a fan.
Yeah, Cops,
okay,
the show.
So there's a show called Cops. There's a Canadian version that's on Netflix called Under Arrest.
Oh, it should be called Monty's.
And it's terrible. But there was an episode on, we were watching the other night, somewhere in season three where there's a homeless guy who cuts his own ball off.
Whoa.
And, like, you don't know what's
happening. By mistake?
No. He was just going through some fucking thing, some trauma, right? And, like, the cops show up. And I thought about ripping your own dick off at the root. And he was like, they're like, what are you doing? He couldn't talk. And he was like, his pants were down around his ankles. And he was blood everywhere.
Oh, he'd already done it.
And like, people were like, yeah, he's using nails and just kind of whatever he has around him to like harm himself.
Oh, no.
He found a can top. And he took it, and the guy's like explaining to the Mountie, like, hey, this is what happened. And he just hacked his what did he say? Started cutting into his sack or something like that. I'm like, oh my God. And Taryn's like, I don't get it. And then the cop is like, and then you see the cop while this other guy's interviewed, like a voiceover, he's like putting like a handkerchief over a fleshy nobule on the ground and picks it up and like runs back to the ambulance. And I'm like, he cut his balls off, dude. Just self-care.
Probably always just want to know what was in that sack.
I feel like that's punishment enough. I hope that he went to a good home.
Me too. With the ball or the guy?
Well,
both.
Sure.
We have a phone call.
Did he have a donor card?
A caller, you're on the air.
Me?
Probably.
Yes.
I don't know that.
Okay. I have a question for you, Jason, and a little bit for Beardy, but mostly you.
Okay, go ahead.
Just leave me out of it.
Well, you can chime in if you want, Doc, but this is a New England IPA question specifically for JP.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
All right, go ahead.
What's your name?
What's your name, first of all?
Johnny. I told it to Bevo, but I guess she didn't pass it on.
She's not here right now.
She's stupid. I'm just kidding. Go ahead. Talk to me, Johnny.
So you hate New England IPA largely because of the way it looks, right?
Yes, that's the most of the issue that I have with it, yeah.
He hates anything new. Right.
Well, that's true. Granted, but, you know, okay, so, like, I think even earlier in the show I heard you say, like, the appearance of them, it turns your stomach, right?
Yeah, I get a literal, like, physical reaction when I look at it.
Yeah, it's
well,
like...
What I was kind of wondering is, do you have the same reaction to, like, Hefeweizen and like, wit beer? Because they look similar.
I don't know. I disagree. I don't think they look similar at all.
I have to say, like, I've never actually seen one in person because I live in Huntington, West Virginia, where you can't get New England IPA.
Well, that to me sounds
like...
I'm just judging
by, like pictures I've seen on the internet where they look quite similar.
They look similar, but
they look chunkier.
Yeah, let me clarify a bit, which is, you know, no pun intended. The ones that really bother me are the ones where you hold it up to the light and it's still, like, a dark marigold color. That's like murky swamp water. The hazy ones don't bug me so much. I just know that it's not supposed to be there, and you can clarify it, and they're doing it on purpose. Wit beers and Hefeweizen.
So the ones that gross you out are the ones that look like yeast starters.
Yes, that you can't shine a light through it. Those are the ones that bug me.
Okay, that makes sense.
What about you, Warren?
I don't like them because of the flavor.
Yeah.
That's why the question was more for JP.
Yeah. It's more of the flavors that all of the particulate in there are adding
I'm not a giant fan of those either, but at least that I'll be like, okay, if you guys like that, that's fine. I still say if you like that, you're not really an IPA fan.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that statement also.
And you can also get those flavors without being cloudy. But if you like the flavors, that's fine. Whatever you want. I don't really care.
I don't even like pulp in my orange juice. So.
Right.
Well, you're strange.
Yeah.
And like Charlie said, most of those beers would taste better if they were clear.
Yeah, it's true.
Is that it, Johnny? Got anything else? Follow up?
No, that's all I had. Okay. I was just wondering if, yeah. if, you know, like Hefs and Wits grossed you out too.
No, not really. I don't look. Let's put it this way:
the chunky yeasty thing.
I don't drink them. Well, even like the non-chunky stuff, it's just that turbidity I don't like. I don't drink Hefeweizens. I don't drink wit beers a lot because of that flavor impact. I don't like that mouthfeel that it lends. But you know, just one asshole to another. I don't know. You know what I mean? It's just it's weird. It's a weird thing. And I was telling Charlie, I'm trying to get over it, I guess, because. I don't know if it's what people like. I don't. It doesn't really hurt
Dude,
me.
If you hate it, then that's you. It's all good for you. Like, yeah. you know, then there's plenty of clear beer that tastes good.
That's what I think. That's what I think. Yeah. I agree. All right, Johnny. Thanks, man.
And
oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Later.
No, you can keep going, man. I just thought you were done.
Well, no, I was just gonna say, like, I really can't have an opinion on the subject until, you know, like we just got our first brewery in town. And unless that guy decides to make one, you know, like, I'll never actually have a fresh example of the style until I travel. So, like, I can't really weigh in on the subject. I was just curious if you know, it was, you know, across styles or if it was just specifically the IPA.
Yeah. No, it's a good question.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, that's all I had. Thanks.
Okay. Cool. Thanks, man.
All right. Later.
Bye. That was Johnny from West Virginia.
West Virginia.
Yeah. Okay, let's keep on going with some feedback. This is entitled to Justin, but, you know, I'll say it's for everybody. The BN is a great source of accurate information for the brewing community, but you got one thing wrong a couple weeks ago on your Neshaminy Creek episode. You mentioned a homeless Vietnam vet who barreled his electric cart through the exit gate of the BN Beer Festival a couple years ago. Well, that guy was in fact a World War II vet, and he has a home. How do I know this? Because he's my grandpa.
his
name is Rod, and he always has done whatever he wants without regard for rules. And now that he's an old man with a World War II hat and American flag sporting electric cart, he finally has an excuse for being an ornery bastard. An ornery bastard who, I'm proud to say, I love very much. So thanks for letting the old man get a free beer. Cheers. That's from Sean. Sean, no problem, man.
Yeah, he's earned it.
He's definitely earned it. If he's earned one thing, it's a free goddamn beer in this country.
Yeah.
My opinion, he should be on the guest list every goddamn fucking day.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
He should, right? He should be on the guest list every time.
He should get a handwritten invitation.
It should be 90-something.
Or two.
Look, yeah. I'm never going to turn that guy away.
No, you can't.
It wouldn't matter if you did.
This is from DG. Says, hey, guys, and Bevo. So with the AB buyout of Wicked Weed, what do we call Wicked Weed now? Anheuser Weed or Wicked Bush? I personally like Wicked Bush. Imagine the marketing potential. Well, with a name like Wicked Bush, you won't get your brewery name read out at World Beer Cup. So there you go.
You couldn't use Firkin, so.
Yeah, they don't have a little lacto in them.
Can't put a bush in them.
No. This is from John from Wisconsin. He says, hey guys, I just want to say thank you for giving me the inspiration to finally brew my first beer. After tuning in for the last 4 years, I obtained quite a bit of knowledge from you guys, along with reading how to brew and listening to all the other great podcasts you guys have. Surprisingly, my pale ale turned out great. Thanks
again.
Good job, John. Thanks for listening for 4 years without acting on any of that information.
Yeah. That's a very long time to not do anything.
Yeah.
If we helped in how to brew, that's great. All the information is in how to brew. You know, as you knew,
I did. We already did that library. Yeah. We did. This is entitled Great Show. This is from Michael. He says, I loved the interview with Florian of Chestnut.
Oh, yeah. Urban Chestnut.
Urban Chestnut. Great questions, great insights into a process of a German-focused brewery in the U.S. Great answers from Florian. I really enjoyed the banter and the jokes this week. You were all on point. All around great show. Wow.
Wow, thanks.
Wow, that's real positive.
I just wanted to, I don't know how to handle this, by the way. I just wanted
we're never all on point, so he's not quite. He's not rated a high accurate guy, you know?
Yeah, right. He has no idea what's going on. He probably just half listened.
Well, no. I mean, I take it value.
I listened at 4X.
Yeah, right. I just wanted to ask, how much do I need to donate and or how many blowjobs do I need to give to become the Brewing Network's executive chairman? Cheers and thanks for everything you guys have done, do, and will continue to do for homebrewing and craft beer.
Thanks, Michael. As far as the executive chairman, I don't know.
Is it opening like that? Is there a job?
Yeah, what's the job description?
No, but I read somewhere that truly smart people create jobs for themselves. Maybe this guy's
We should be adding, what would that do for us? Please follow up.
Do you have a chair?
Right. Can you sit
down? Qualification number one.
This is our favorite topic. Hello, Justin, JP, Bevo, Tasty, Beardy, and whoever else is on the show when this email is read. My name is Bill. I'm from Oshawa, Ontario. Currently, I'm on business in Halifax, Ontario. I like to use my time while traveling on businesses to visit as many craft beer bars and breweries as possible. Tonight, after a craft beer cocktail party, I ventured over to another bar to get an actual beer. So I ordered an IPA and looked forward to drinking a pint of something that didn't taste like a fairy tale cocktail from Neverland, where children never want to grow up and just want to drink juice. Which I thought was the perfect explanation for this juicy fucking garbage that's been going around the industry the last 6 months.
Yeah.
It's a fairy tale cocktail where you never want to grow up and you just want to drink juice. I want juice.
Not really ready for beer.
Gaga goo goo. Grow up!
Yeah.
It's bitter! It's supposed to be bitter!
It's an IPA. Get used to it.
After a few sips...
Or order something else. Don't get an IPA.
Right, yeah.
That's what I mean. If you like juicy IPAs, you don't like IPAs.
Right.
After a few sips, I thought to myself, damn, that's good. I looked back at the menu on the wall to figure out what I was drinking so I could check in to Untappd. Oh, God.
Finally.
When I realized what I was drinking and enjoyed it quite a bit, I broke out laughing. It was a New England IPA. It made me think of you guys. Sorry, but it was really delicious. Maybe you guys should try closing your eyes before trying a new beer. You might be pleasantly surprised. Do you ever go to a restaurant and say, you just blend everything together. I don't even look at what I eat anyway. No, it's part of the thing. Fuck, keep doing what you guys are doing and never stop. You are way more valuable than you think to the craft beer homebrew community. Cheers from Canada, Bill.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks for the drinks.
Yeah.
Close your eyes.
Enjoy your murky IPA.
Kidding me? Close my eyes.
Well, that's like a plate of food coming out, and you got to keep the napkin over it.
Yeah. I'm with
Charlie. If everybody's drinking it, I'm not going to knock it.
I don't think that's what he said.
Yeah, that's not what Charlie said.
That's not what he said.
What did he say?
He said, if you like it, that's fine, but personally, everybody else would like it if it was clear.
Yeah. And he said...
he'd like it better, but he's not going to be the one that's like, you know...
Correct.
Right. Well, and he said he won't tell a brewer to stop making it if the brewery's making money selling it.
Yeah, I'm with him. That's what I'm saying. That's exactly where I'm with him.
Yeah.
My heart's in the brewers. These are my peeps.
Right. Yeah. Doesn't mean he likes it.
No, if you get money
or wants to drink it.
You get money back, yeah.
Right. It's a business.
Yeah, but I think that's, I don't know, that it's also kind of counter to the craft movement.
Again, I say this sometimes on the show. Sometimes, you know, us guys in the 5% or 10%, who are like, you know, like get the whole thing figured out. We're not speaking for the masses, and we got business. You know, makes beer for the masses. 90% that buy it all.
And the money,
credit cards.
The masses are IDs. Asses.
Masses are asses, Tasty. That's
true.
Straight from the mouth of babes.
Exactly. Right
there. Yeah, I don't know, man. Whatever. I don't have a skin in the game. I don't really give a shit. But I just don't want to see it on fucking Instagram every 10 minutes. This is called Sharting, and it's from Clint. He says, so I've gotten a bit behind on the session for reasons which will soon become obvious, and just recently listened to Justin claim that he had sharted more in the previous year than in the rest of his life. This morning, as my 4-month-old son sharted into a freshly changed diaper, I realized that babies shart quite often, and it seems very unlikely that Justin is anywhere close to the average annual sharting rate of his first year or so, just to set the record straight.
You don't know Justin.
Apparently not. Apparently he held it all in.
Yeah.
He sharted all.
He sharted a lot last year.
This next one is from Tim, and he asks the question, was I misled? He says, so here I am listening to my favorite over-the-top tinfoil hat-wearing nutjob conspiracy theory podcasts called Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, which, fuck that title. They don't want you to know the moon landing.
All
was
those,
fake.
Those people.
Yeah. The episode was on whether Hitler escaped Germany and faked his suicide.
Oh, yeah.
They don't want you to know that.
There's some interesting conspiracy theories around that.
Yeah, I'm sure there are. Interesting to say the least, he said. But what really caught my attention, and he said really all in caps.
Whoa.
So you know that it's really, really.
Really?
Was that towards the end, just after 53 minutes into the episode, the host asks for our opinions on the matter. If you think this is something that the public has been misled on. guy said Misled. Mm-hmm. Needless to say, I had to listen to that part about five times over to make sure that I heard someone else say Misled. I wonder if he's a BN fan. Anyway, keep on keeping on, jerks, and suck it, Bevo and JP. So I don't know how Bevo's now lumped in
rude.
With me. I know,
yeah.
Right? Yeah, Misled.
Wow. And no thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for the offer, but no.
Hey, it's 2017.
Right.
Everybody can suck it.
Yeah, I prefer to be cold and rigid and alone. Thank you.
Rigid.
Right.
I'm in
one.
Frigid.
Rigid.
Yeah. Rigid.
Hey.
Or rigid. I don't know. Look, Sam and I talk. I'm just saying. I'm kidding. This is from Poyo Sato, our friend Poyo Sato. He says, this is in reference to the Barley Mo show, where JP was talking about wishing there was a show in which there were stoners that would get high and see and talk to ghosts.
There is a show.
There is such a show, and it airs on Hulu, and it's called Deadbeat. It's pretty funny, and they're up to about three or four seasons. Thanks for the info and comedy on the long drives to and from work. And then he says, touch the felt.
You never have to smoke alone. You can just
I've heard that in a long time.
I know, right?
Yeah. Three or four seasons?
Right.
What was it? What was the name?
Deadbeat?
Deadbeat.
And I thought that's a great that would be a great concept, like mediums, like Ghostbusters, you know, psychic mediums, and they get super high and they fucking talk to ghosts because ghosts actually aren't real.
But for a few episodes,
I'm talking like for me, it would be a 4-minute skit on YouTube, and that's it. Right. Never touch it again. But
these guys are
getting paid.
They must have content,
right?
Huh.
This one, oh geez, this is a long ass one. This is from Chris in North. In North Carolina, NC.
Yes.
Thank you. It's called Brewery Sellout. He goes, hi, everyone.
It's an Asheville thing.
Long-time listener, first time writing anything at all. So,
whoa.
I'm proud to accept your very first email. Yeah. That's pretty nice.
Oh, words.
How old is he?
Yeah. Remember that college essay you forgot?
Yeah.
Turn this in.
I'm currently 4 years old. I enjoy finger painting and sharding. I enjoy your discussion on the Urban Chestnut show about the North Carolina brewery that was bought by that Belgian company. I'm not ashamed to admit that I was still upset about that after more than a week between hearing the news and listening to Monday's session. You spent a good deal of time commenting on how there have been many big beer buyouts, but this one seemed to hit craft beer fans where it hurt. I wanted to write in to offer a local perspective on why this might have been such a disappointing loss to the community. The short story is that the news of the buyout was the second kick in the nuts to hit North Carolina craft beer in less than 2 weeks. And the first kick was still fresh in everyone's mind. An organization called Craft Freedom, led by the owners of Charlotte Breweries Noda and Old Mecklenburg.
Okay.
First of all, they misspelled old. It's O-L-D-E.
Old day.
Oh. Old Mecklenburg had been working for years to raise the self-distribution cap in North Carolina from 20,000 barrels to approximately 200,000 barrels. Going into April, the bill looked like it had its best chance ever until the distributor's lobby showed up in Raleigh with trainloads of hookers and blow. Next thing we all know, it sounds like I need to be working the distributor's lobby. Next thing we all knew, the language raising the distribution cap was stripped from the bill. That brewery in Asheville was a part of this effort to raise the cap. They were full members in several craft beer advocacy groups. Old Mecklenburg is right against the production cap and was planning to open a second location in a suburb of Charlotte. The last I heard is those plans have now been shelved, and Old Mech is stuck at their current production levels all because of this change in that law. I think we haven't even begun to see the full impact of how badly North Carolina breweries will be harmed by that bill that AB helped sink. I'm sure I've ranted more than enough. Thanks again for helping to bring this to everyone's attention. That sucks.
Yeah, because pushed Wicked Weed into a corner. You know.
Yeah.
How are they going to grow without, leaving the state?
They're doing just fine.
They're capped.
That bill was about self-distribution.
Yeah.
They would have had to rely on the three-tier system after a certain size.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, now Wicked Weed is in that tier that they helped drag the bill down. I don't understand.
I think that's problem. They're now on the other side where nobody wants to raise that cap because they want to basically freeze out craft beer in North Carolina, and then anybody above that cap, they don't have any worries.
Well, the irony is that it really hurt Wicked Weed, which in turn hurt ABI. You know, and ABI, pushed to get it, not happen. So, I mean, they're kind of stuck in terms of what Wicked Weed can do in North Carolina in terms of not going to distributor. Of course, now they're owned by one of the major distributors, probably in North Carolina.
Well, yeah, so it might not have affected Wicked Weed either way because they were getting bought out.
Right.
It's just the other craft breweries.
Yeah, they're on the outside looking
right,
in.
Yeah, well, they lost.
Wicked Weed guys are on the inside.
They lost an advocate.
Well, right, and now they have to decide when they cross that threshold because then they can no longer self-distribute.
Right.
And that cuts into their bottom line. And so then they have to start making bigger, serious moves in terms of expansion in order to justify that hidden revenue.
Or like what's happening with Goose Island. You could, you know, put some, I think AAB has a brewery in Wilmington or something. Somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Somewhere in that region, they can start putting up some, you know, horizontal, some vertical fermenters, start making the Wicked Weed beers and send them everywhere.
Good.
It's like Goose Island. It's in airports everywhere. Why? Because they're brewing it in AB breweries.
I heard a very ambiguous two-sentence news segment on the radio that said AB InBev is investing in more breweries.
More craft breweries.
Well,
right?
No. Investing in its existing breweries to add capacity.
Hmm.
And that's all they said. And so I'm wondering if now that they've bought this round of craft breweries, they're now just going to start investing in breweries like Fairfield, adding capacity and everything in order to just start making those brands nationwide.
Well, you know, Fairfield did add capacity. They put in like 8 1250 barrel tanks to make 10 barrel and Goose Island.
And Fairfield was a shrinking brewery for Anheuser-Busch up until this last round of brewery acquisition.
There you go. Creates jobs.
Yeah.
I mean, probably like 2 jobs, but jobs.
Well, but bringing jobs back to Fairfield.
That's right. Make Fairfield great again.
Yeah. Take that, Oregon.
Again.
Well, rest assured that what's happening in Fairfield is happening.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, yeah, at all the AB.
Throughout all the AB breweries.
Yeah. You know what else is happening? Neshaminy Creek Brewing has been on the Philly beer map since 2012. It's 3-time Philly Beer Scene Magazine Brewer of the Year, 2014 through 16. 2-time GABF Vienna Style Lager Medal winner. And also, they won a bronze for their smoked lager in 2016, which is a good beer. Large, expanded, and recently renovated tap room with 24 beers on tap, 18 of which are rotating and seasonal and or limited beers. Variety of beer styles from hoppy double IPAs, boo, to sessionable and poundable lagers. Yay!
Hey!
To oak fermented saisons and sour beers. Sure.
Oh, fine.
Free brewery tours on Saturday. So check it out. NeshaminyCreekBrewing.com. That was a good show.
And there, it was.
Yeah, it was a great show.
That's cool, man.
He was a nice guy, made good beer.
Yeah.
What more can you ask for? Had a huge wiener.
Great combination.
Yeah.
I mean,
live closer.
That's right. Okay, I think we got one. We got a couple more. Dear Justin, you know talent hack. I have to give the Brewing Network props it deserves, as well as a forthcoming PayPal donation, for all of your great beer information and brewing knowledge. I've recently entered my Belgian Dark Strong into a completion, but I'm sure he meant competition, at the Elevator Brewery in Columbus, Ohio. Not only did it win, but I was allowed to brew it on their commercial system, and it's being released as part of Columbus's Craft Beer Week.
Nice.
That's cool, man. Elevator Brewing was great. They allowed me full access to brew my recipe on their system, as well as be involved in label design and packaging. Hell, they even put my name on the label. The brew turned out so good that there's a release party on 20 May. Hmm. Are you, come on, what are you, not American?
This is the U.S.
Paul. Yeah, May 20, bro. The Dark Strong will be on tap for the party, but the majority is in 750 milliliter bottles for sale in the Columbus area. If there are any listeners in the Columbus area, come join me for the party. Once again, thanks, JP, Suck It, Prost, Paul. Good job, Paul. Congratulations.
Well, what a great brewery for extending all that courtesy to him. They were really generous.
That's nice.
Label design, all that, that's great.
Even got his goddamn name on the label.
He's got
That's
his
pretty
name
good.
On there, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Stoked.
She's got his website name on there. KCB.
This is from Osmus. He says, hello. I want to start by saying that I love your show. It's great just to sit back and relax to, and has really improved my appreciation of quality beer. I'm writing from Denmark because you asked the German brewer about the state of brewing in European schooling.
He's Bavarian, by the way.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sure he would fight this guy for saying that. I'm currently in the gymnasium. My American brain's like, why are you doing calisthenics? What's happening?
And there's one in Denmark?
Yeah. I'm currently in the gymnasium, which is kind of a mix of high school and college, studying biotech. Right? Why is it called the gymnasium? What is happening?
Yeah. Are you just hanging out at the local high school?
He might be. He's studying biotechnology.
Get in the girl showers.
Part of that is studying, part of that is a study of brewing beer, in which we experiment with the science behind making a great beer, culminating in a trip to Munich, Germany, where we're going to visit some breweries and look at their techniques. That sounds awesome. He says, thank you for all the great entertainment you have made for us. It always helps on a long commute. Thanks, man. That's,
I
tell you
my
what.
Belching.
Yeah, it's a lot of, sounds like Europe has a lot better education than us, you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. It'd be nice to be close to Munich, to just go visit and try out German beers.
That would be nice. I would really appreciate it.
Yeah. I'd even leave the gymnasium.
Yeah, well.
How long is that gymnasium gig?
I don't know, right?
Sounds like a year, right?
That's the weird thing. Why is it called the gymnasium?
You're like high school, your gymnasium, college.
Yeah. Apparently it's a combination.
Yeah.
Did we learn how to drink or fuck or whatever? What's going on?
I think it's, you have to stretch before you do either of those. Maybe.
Maybe that's why it's at the gymnasium. Room for stretching.
You have plenty of room. No. Bev, what do you think?
What country was this?
Denmark.
Denmark.
You were just there, were you?
I have no idea. I'm very confused.
Yeah.
I've been there.
Oh.
You clearly missed out on the best part, which sounds like the fucking gymnasium.
They're so socialist there. I don't know. Maybe they might, I mean, it sounds like it's something you would actually need. I bet it's,
like it got lost in translation,
I bet it's
maybe?
Like a public service thing. You know what I'm saying? Like they do in Israel.
Like YMCA?
Everybody's got to go through like a little
Just Google it.
Give some time.
Here we go. I Googled it. The Danish gymnasium offers a three-year general academically oriented upper secondary programming.
Upper secondary.
Which builds on the 9th and 10th form of the focus locker and leads to the upper secondary school exit examination or the student cursamen.
I mean, yeah, it totally makes sense.
This qualifies a student for admission to higher education, preparatory subject to the special entrancy regulations applying to the individual higher education programmes. Colloquially, gymnasium refers to what is formerly called Styx.
The band?
Apparently. Oh. Apart from the common academic gymnasium, there are other types of occupation-oriented upper secondary education in Denmark. The main ones are Hjørge Handelsdanken.
It's pretty good.
Or, thanks. Or HHX, Higher Commercial Examination Programming. Or Hjørge Tinskik Ingskammen.
That's probably terrible, but that's good.
Or Higher Technical Examination Programming. And, let's see, Jorge Fordelbergskiskammen.
Oh, I love that.
Or Higher Preparatory Examination Programming.
Hit the images button.
The images
Norwegian
button?
Yeah.
For
Gymnasium Denmark.
For Denmark Gymnasium.
Jesus Christ. Well, there's literally people in a fucking gymnasium, but that looks like a cool building. Is it one building? I still don't get it.
I think it's one place.
Is that it? Is it one giant room?
Here's one in Langerstager, and here's another in Frederiksberg. Is there such a place in Denmark called Frederiksberg?
I'm sorry, did you say Landriksberg?
Landriks-snorkingbergen.
So he was not wrong when he said it's in between high school and college.
Yeah, it was a preparatory school, right?
Because you couldn't go around.
Well, I guess
college.
It sounds like a post-secondary kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. But
where you can get a skill, maybe.
Yeah, just
you don't
vocational.
Have to go faster than
yeah.
Yeah, vocational school.
Huh.
I mean, he did kind of say that, but we had to Google it.
But
anyway.
I'm stupid, Moran. I just didn't understand why it's called the gymnasium.
I was all, yeah. I thought it was just the gym. He was at the gym working out.
That's what I thought, too, when I read it. I was like, get off the internet. What are you doing, man?
Yeah.
I knew better.
That was the gist of the letter, was like. Gymnasium? What the fuck's that?
Yeah. I'll tell you what's not confusing. If you go to beersmith.com, you get a 21-day free trial of Beersmith software. And that is not confusing, my friend.
No,
that will
easy.
Help you keep track of your beer. It will help you write your recipes a little bit better. And it will help you keep track of all of your recipes.
Did even say got some calculators.
It'll even do math for you. All of the math is going to do that for you.
That's my weak point.
Like geometry?
Maybe. It might be geometry.
That's useless.
Yeah. I've proven that time and time again. But anyway, 21-day free trial. It's all you really need to remember. Beersmith.com. Go there. Check them out. Do all that kind of stuff. Okay, I think we're almost ready to go. I feel like we had some other stuff to talk about.
That was all the feedback?
That was all the feedback.
Well, we were supposed to talk to Dave, but he
Oh, right.
That's right.
Yeah, what happened to
you? Oh.
He's apparently riding his motorcycle in the wilderness. And
didn't he do this to us 2 fucking weeks ago?
No, that was not his fault.
So he's going up the country?
It sounds like it was his fault.
No, it was my fault.
Well, we have to apologize to all the people.
I forgot that we were supposed to talk to him.
Oh,
so I didn't set up proper planning.
Well, now my joke in the beginning didn't make any sense.
But it's his fault tonight.
Maybe it's the tumor. He forgot.
Not a tumor.
You know, it feels like a tumor, but sometimes isn't. Boners.
Well,
rapidly growing.
Yeah.
It's sometimes isn't.
Thank you, by the way.
Well, it's all leading to this. Adam and Eve is determined to help you spice things up in the bedroom, and they're backing up. Yeah. And they're backing up that promise. Check this out. Go to adamandeve.com, and you'll get 50% off almost any item when you enter code BNARMY at checkout. Now backed by popular demand, however, and for a limited time only, you'll also get the free Big O kit. Adam and Eve's Big O kit includes their exclusive Climax gel and a mini vibrator. So now you've got a new way to get her off. To get her off your back, more like right. it.
When she gets tired of your benign tumor.
Yeah. Leave me alone, lady. I'm not a machine. Here's a machine.
Yeah, I got a whole kit for you.
Yeah. Get out of here. I have to go play Destiny. What girl wouldn't love that? You also get your entire order sent to you for free. So hurry up, take advantage of this limited time offer. You can choose a new adult toy, a naughty movie, or almost anything else. When you choose that one item at 50% off, you'll get free shipping, plus the Big O kit, which includes the Climax gel and the mini vibrator. Ooh. You won't find this deal anywhere else, everybody. Just use the offer code BNARMY at checkout. That's BNARMY at adamandeve.com.
Nice.
Boom.
Bev, are you... Okay, I know that we've joked about it on the show, but are you trying to get us a tour at their warehouse? The Adam and Eve warehouse?
No, I'm not.
Can you, please? I don't know. I've never wanted anything more in my entire life.
I drove past it. I think it's in Minneapolis. Or it's somewhere... I know it's in between Minneapolis and... Wait, Minneapolis is in Minnesota, right?
Yes.
So, shut up.
Some would say.
Some between here and Minneapolis. I'm confused.
It's between Minnesota and Wisconsin because I drove the last time we had NHC in Wisconsin, or wherever the crap. I don't know places. But wherever we had it before, I drove to a family reunion in the neighboring state. And wow. I remember passing it and taking a photo near it.
Hey, Beep, you're like Travelocity.
Thank you.
How do we get our asses in that warehouse?
When it's so glitchy.
How do we get our asses in that warehouse?
So I looked
Road
for this.
Road trip.
Come on. Get it.
I looked
Talk
for like,
to them.
I don't
like
know.
Where it is. And I got this article that they completed a warehouse expansion. And I think this is like a speech from the owner.
Welcome to you all.
That's stupid. I thought it would be funny. They're in Hillsboro, North Carolina, apparently.
So in between Minneapolis and Wisconsin.
Yeah.
I did take a road trip in North Carolina once, so I could have been confusing that.
All right.
Geography's hard.
It's so hard.
Dude, check this out.
It's not.
Well, I'm revoking your Travelocity credentials.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Now you're just Captain
Yeah,
Obvious.
No, I suck.
I'm sorry now, too.
Their original warehouse was just over 56,000 square feet.
Whoa.
Their expansion,
it's like 3 acres,
no pun intended... 30,000 square feet expansion.
On top of it.
Crap.
Yeah.
So now it is about 2 acres.
I mean, do you guys really want to see two acres of dildos?
Yes, I do want to see 2 acres of dildos.
Acres of dildos.
That's a lot of.
We are thrilled by the continued growth of our company, said Adam and Eve President David Groves. Adam and Eve has gone from a condoms by mail business, I don't know what condoms are, to the number one adult retailer in America.
Oh, we're going to get a mention here, aren't we?
Now they sell adults?
Thanks to the Brick Network.
Right. Yeah. Well, this was only 2 years ago, so I don't really know. But that's who you look for. The President David Groves, Beverly, she's already tuned out. David Groves, Hillsboro, North Carolina.
Just looking for the 6,500 square feet of dildo.
Yeah.
DVDs.
You see me imaging.
Probably a big bin.
I want to see the Google images on that shit.
Oh, yeah.
I just picture that scene from Indiana Jones where they hide all the things the big warehouse.
Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah.
all I
he's
see.
Tucking
right.
the arc away.
Yeah. Yeah. Crates and crates and crates.
That's what I envision as yeah. well.
And I want to see that.
I want to see that as well.
Yeah.
I mean, how awesome is that going to be? Oh, I really want to go. Adam and Eve, people, if you're listening, Adam yeah. or Eve, I don't care which, let us know.
We should go on. Yeah.
Do you think there are robots that roam the aisles, or are there just North Carolinians or whatever they are?
I don't know. That's a good question.
If you get a parking lot, we could put together a beer fest or something, you know, like BNA, yeah. like 12.1 or something.
We really could. Maybe, like, yeah, make it some sort of fundraiser
yeah,
or something
exactly.
for the community.
Yeah.
The community, yeah.
The community. The adult community.
The underserved. Free batteries for the underserved.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Oh, did you run out of batteries? Sorry. Here's two double Ds.
Yeah.
Enjoy yourself.
Treat yourself.
You've earned it.
Yeah.
Speaking of movies, I rewatched The Brothers Grimsby the other night. Have you guys seen The Brothers
I have
Grimsby?
Seen that, but I forgot.
Nope.
It's like that latest Sacha Baron Cohen bomb, but it's actually pretty funny.
Oh yeah.
No one's you've seen it?
No, I have not seen it. Then I was thinking something. No.
Is it about The Brothers Grimm?
No, it's just entitled.
Oh well, that's
they're
stupid.
From the town of Grimsby.
Huh.
No, it's The Brothers Grimsby.
Yeah. I don't like it.
I saw Borat. That was enough for me.
Yeah,
I saw parts of not Borat. What was the other one that was terrible?
First of all, none
Bruno.
Of
Bruno.
Bruno was great. Are you kidding me?
Bruno was awful.
You're awful. Well, here I thought
all
I had
I remember
a whole
thing is the penis from that movie, just the swinging penis.
I'm sure you did. I'm sure that's all I remember.
Stuck in your mind.
That's where she's at.
Yeah.
Literally seared.
Where she starts and begins.
Well, you need to see The Brothers. Sam would love it.
Oh, that's a good
show. Shocking. I mean, guarantees I'm going to enjoy it.
Oh, my God. All right, well, I can't talk about it. But if you haven't seen it, go see that movie, man. It's a good movie.
Thanks for the recommendation.
Huh.
Yeah. Is that 4-star or 3.5?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I rated it on Facebook. I give it. I think I give it a 3.9 out of 5.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. So it's not.
You're
great.
Not a high rater though. I mean, you're a realistic rater.
I'm realistic. Yeah. I'm realistic. But you know, I wouldn't give it a 4, but a 3.9. Don't go into it thinking it's the greatest thing since Borat, because it's not. It's just a funny movie that has some really outrageous parts that
so
wouldn't make
you
laugh for a
straight hard. Or high? What do you think?
High.
Right. Wait a minute.
Straight, yeah. Sober
for you?
Or high?
Yeah. Is that a question for you?
No. Yeah. If you should say high, really high.
Okay.
Right. Comatose or functional?
Yeah,
exactly. Is the scale out of 5?
Yeah.
Is the 3.9? Yeah. Oh, okay.
3.9 out of 5.
Okay.
Now, to be fair, I'll give The Love Guru 4.5 out of 5. So I think it's The Love Guru's a bit better.
Okay.
But
there was room for improvement?
Yeah, sure. Most movies have room for improvement. Yeah.
Okay.
What do you give Snakes on a Plane?
Oh, that's a solid 3.5.
Wow.
Yeah.
But if you're high, it's like a 4.5.
But if you're high, yes, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
Huh. That's what it is.
I don't know. I don't know if we'd rate those movies the same.
I guarantee you we wouldn't.
You just don't get high.
But we should still do that. I've always wanted to do like a YouTube movie rating like site, but it's too much work, like editing all that shit together.
Yeah.
But I think my ratings would be the most real ratings because nothing would ever get a 5.
They're the most real to you.
Hey, you do what you do, right?
Yeah.
You do what you know.
Yes.
You talk about what you know.
Right.
Well, I think there's a video podcast that kind of like, you know, where people weekly.
Oh, I'm sure.
Address that kind of shit?
I'm sure.
Why should be watching it? I'd like to watch it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what they are.
Everyone let me know.
I mean, they have podcasts about like unboxing toys. I mean, fucking whatever. And people get paid money to unbox toys that they get sent for free.
And just talk about their experience.
Talk about the quality.
It.
Yeah, it's fucking ridiculous what you can do to make money out there in the world. And we're actually like doing something. We're actually getting information from people. The lightsaber on this one is very highly detailed. There's 4 buttons. Well, usually the film product one is 5 buttons. But so they cut down a little bit of it. But that's okay because I can overlook it because the pre-production model
Yeah, and the toy manufacturer pays for that.
I think they just give them free toys.
Yeah, they just send them their influencers. They influence other nerds to buy those toys.
Fuck, I got an influence for you. Stupid.
Oh, influence all over your face.
Oh, my gosh.
Speaking of industry influencers, Drake's Dealership, Drake's Beers. I think that spot's opening in Sacramento sometime soon, right?
Yeah, they're taking over
this weird, like, modern art building or some shit. Yeah, it looks great. But Drake's is doing a lot of good stuff, man.
Yeah.
They're throwing beers out there left and right. They got some new beers coming out. And so if you're in the Bay Area, be sure to be drinking Drakes.
I was just talking to
you. This coming Saturday is Recession Fest.
Yes.
Oh, Jekyll, that's right. Square.
The 30th.
I'll be down there. I'll be signing, you know.
Well, it's not this Saturday. It's
that's the one.
A week. Yeah, a week from Saturday.
No, it's the 20th.
Then it's is it? This yeah. Saturday.
Huh. Yeah.
Doc.
All right.
The 19th will be at the Triple Rock. For their nuclear beer thing, which
the nuclear
free
fest.
I think yeah. The Brewing Network has associated with the beer there, right?
We did, yeah. So we got invited. Thank you for reminding me. I wrote a fucking blog about it. It's on our website right now. You can go check it out. where we got invited by Triple Rock to partake in a recipe collaboration for a triple IPA of all goddamn things. And it was pretty cool.
So you went.
I was the only one to answer the call. Yeah. Shimkey.
I was out of country. But yeah, I wasn't available. If I'd have been available, I would have been there.
You would have loved it because the first part we talked about, we sat in with Jeff, the brewer, and a couple other folks, and talking. He's like, okay, so we don't have to do a triple IPA. He goes, do you guys want to do a triple IPA? I'm like, no, to be honest with you,
yeah,
we don't.
Right.
And
that's our guy speaking. He's the guy that represents the Big Nader.
Yeah. Yes.
If I'd have been there.
I'm like, no, there's no way. Oh, I would have talked you down. Okay, not really. Well, cool. I would have said, no, I don't want to do it.
We'd have had more of a conversation.
Of course, yeah.
So what did you do?
Well, and then a couple of other people from like some other blogs and stuff. I don't honestly remember. Yeah, it was a few
like
different people there.
A media group or something.
Yes, sir. Yes. And they're like, or Jeff's like, well, what do you guys want to brew? And someone's like, a cloudy beer, a cloudy IPA. And Jeff's like, his face just was like he stared into the eyes of Medusa. It just went stone face. And he's like, what do you guys think about that? And I'm like, I can't stand them. I can't stand them either.
Sure.
And we're talking about it, he's like, and also you can get those flavors, and I'm paraphrasing, from a non-cloudy beer.
Yeah,
and I'm like, I will blow you right now with my mouth.
Did you?
I've tried, but
he's moving fast.
He's moving fast. He's a short guy. He moves real fast.
Yeah, little guy.
You're tall. You
know. Yeah, he's like, catch me. Anyway, so we talked about just brewing something else, and then someone else at the table was like, well, you did say triple IPA in the email, and that's kind of what I had my heart set on, and so I was like, I'm not gonna crush this guy's dream, so I'll do whatever you guys want.
Wow.
So we went back to the triple IPA.
That's a new thing for you.
I'm learning.
Not crushing dreams.
It was a collaboration beer, which means...
Like, right, it was a collaboration.
You don't get your way 100%.
Right, exactly. And you know, I made it a point to be... Because I would have sat there normally and be like, no, I really think this is a stupid thing to do because... Who's making a triple IPA anymore? Can we make something like... then I realized...
Sort of
like,
out of season.
Yeah, well, and then I realized that Jeff at Triple Rock there makes... kind of every style of beer, and he does it really, really well. He has a lot of English-style beers, a lot of low ABV beers, and that's kind of what I would go for anyway. Mm-hmm. I don't think he does a lot of these triple IPAs, and so I kind of like it worked out pretty good, where normally I'd be pushing for a lower ABV thing that I could actually enjoy drinking, but he does those things anyway, so why not give these kids what they want?
Why not? And the proceeds from this event go to the Lindsay Wildlife Museum.
That's true.
It's like 10-minute drive from here.
Yeah. Oh. That's pretty neat, man.
Pretty cool.
I can crawl to it from my house.
I'm sure you have crawled from it.
I have crawled from it.
That's where we have our the Doe's Home Brew Club meetings that meet there in the basement.
It's like 100 feet from my house.
That's awesome.
He's his own exhibit.
So there you go. So May 19th is the Nuclear Free
Friday
Fest.
Night, May
it's
19th.
Like strong beers at Triple Rock.
And then the next day is a Drake-sponsored Session Beer Fest at Jack Planet.
Focus. That benefits some bicycle organization?
Yeah, it's a bicycle thing.
Focus. A bicycle? Why?
Yeah, whatever.
What happened to cars' rights? You know, I see it like share the road now all the time for motorcycles also. Why? Why am I sharing the road? We have lanes. He has his own lane.
Right. Yeah.
Bikes don't always have their own lanes. Why am I sharing a road with a motorcycle?
Well, I don't think it's not for bikes' rights. It's to get more people on bikes. So that way there are more people congesting the roads.
Thank God.
Right.
Pissing off the drivers. In the Hummers.
In the Hummers. All the drivers in the Hummers.
They're like, the fuck with the Hummers. Well, who doesn't, really?
I know.
Yeah. It's got to be time to get rid of that thing, right, Doc?
Yeah.
What are you going to get? You're going to get a mini.
Something taller?
I'm going to get lifted, man. Get a Mini Cooper, please. Just go the complete opposite direction.
No, I kind of been looking at Mini Coopers anyway, so...
You should talk to Kim and Andy Wood about that before you make that purchase.
I've had some people have some bad ones, and I have some good ones.
Yeah. I think they used to be kind of shitty. Where I know what you're saying. Like Kim and Andy Wood would say,
especially if they're an automatic. I've heard a lot of people have problems with the automatic one.
Yeah, well, I think the first couple of years it was like every Mini Cooper had a warranty issue within its first year, but I don't think that's the case anymore. Hmm. I don't know. I'm not a fucking
car. I just know Kim and Andy were driving down the street and parts of their engine started falling off. Literally.
Yeah, I've had my car fall apart too when I'm driving. It's fine. You survive it. It's okay. It makes you stronger.
Welcome to Car Talk.
That's right. We run the gamut here, everybody. Okay, do you guys want to leave?
I do.
Can we eat some food first?
Know. No. We can't eat any
there's
food.
No other thing to talk about. I mean, I could make a talk.
Yeah. Oh. Nothing in the world of beer happened this week.
No beer news today.
No, I didn't do any beer news. I assumed that we
anything
would
else
have...
anybody came up they want to talk about? Like, in the beer news, not just news.
No.
No, I'm good.
Good. All right.
Yeah. Let's leave.
Let's
everybody.
Wrap this shit up.
Thank you very much for hanging with us. Thank you to Dr. Charlie Bamforth for coming all the way down from UC Davis. Look up his name for his website. I tried to look up his name and website, Bamforth Beer website. Yep. Nothing.
It's not Charlie Whatever or Bamforth Whatever either.
Yeah, Bamforth Whatever Beer or whatever it is. It's not that. But anyway, go to the Master Brewers Association of America website. That's MBAA.com. Go to the store. Find his books. They are really nice. They're not thick. They're straight. It's a lot like him. Straight to the point.
Well, but there's a lot of big words.
That's kind of a lot of big words, but it's okay. You can get through. You can do what I did in high school. Pretend you understand them, and ditch out on finals.
Right.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in, and go listen to some more Beer Radio over on thebrewingnetwork.com, and then we will see you next week. We have Lucky Envelope from Seattle. Our friend Barry's coming down.
In studio.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
nice.
So it's going to be a good show. All right, everybody. We'll see you later.
Nice hanging.
Justin's a nice guy and winning the race. JP does great as his charity can.
Yeah.